Mm-hmm.
You got it right.
Yes. Yes.
Could I go ahead and call this meeting board? This is a regular scheduled board discussion session, March 10th, 2015. Before we begin, board members, we want to just touch base collectively to figure out how you want to proceed here. We do have some work to get done. We have to get done today or next week. I don't know how long it will take. We can either do that first, we can do it last, we can do it in the middle. I don't care as long as we have time to do it. What is everybody's pleasure?
What do you mean, work to do?
We got a superintendent search. We have some things to go over. We have things to discuss, and it may take a little while. We have questions to go over. I mean, it may take a few. It may take a little bit.
You're in charge.
Well, I'm trying to get
first.
The board.
First, yeah, I would say let's do it. Let's do
it. It is important that we get done with this. All right. First order, you all understand and know. I got a call yesterday from Dr. Rodriguez, and he, unfortunately, for some family health issues, has been dealing with his, not himself, dealing with his father-in-law, and just they didn't think he could make the move. And over the weekend, he said he and his wife finally decided that, some things have changed since he first put his application in, but he wanted me to express his, sincere, be very gracious, wanted me to express his sincere thanks to everybody. Leaves us with four candidates. I don't know if there was any discussion on adding one. I am fine with just four. I think if you have your top five, now we've got our top four. And moving on with that, so unless anybody has any real objections to something like that. John?
I'd like to discuss maybe adding someone.
All right. Ms. Manis?
Yeah, I think that, as I stated when we had the conversation for the original candidates, we gave an opportunity to a less qualified candidate because it was an internal candidate, and I had requested that we also give an opportunity to a qualified candidate that's out of the state. We chose to do a national search because we said we were open to having candidates from outside the state, yet we had qualified candidates, and we chose not to. And I think it would be an opportunity to revisit that, especially because we are not spending a lot of money flying anybody in, and it would be money well spent. I think the taxpayers would appreciate that diversity of candidates at the table.
Anybody else?
Yeah. I had a candidate myself. I asked about Mr. Orlando Ramos. Mm-hmm. And he was, as Dr. Bland had put with Dewey and Orlando, that they were both less qualified. And I kind of went with him. So, because they're out of state and they were less qualified. If somebody at this table could put a more qualified than those two and tell me a good reason why, and I don't even have my book, so I don't know if I'm ready to discuss that at this moment, but I would be happy because we did ask about what if we go through the five, never mind the four. That doesn't have to be gospel. Dr. Blint said he would come back for free and go over. So I'm happy with me personally is fine with the four at this time, but I would be willing to entertain, but I have to have my books. Because we have to have somebody facilitate who would be that fifth. And for me, it wouldn't be Dewey, and it wouldn't be Orlando, because it was made common sense. So who is the other out-of-state candidate that there would be?
There was another one that he recommended from Maryland. He recommended two from out-of-state, Killian and Ms. Cianfrani, I think it was, from Maryland. And that one, it's a potential, and she was recommended by the consultant whose advice we didn't take to begin with.
Well,
with
and
some of our choices.
You're
so.
Right, and I saw Howard Kowak. Without my book,
Scott
I can't.
Yeah. I've seen
that's what I'm saying. I'm unprepared to do that. So, right now, I agree, but, I know that five of us picked one of those people in there. And then we had strong, so I'm not sure. That's a healthy discussion. You want to take a break and I'll go get the books out of the trunk of my car? That's fine, but, maybe you should weigh in.
Anyone else?
I don't
got before we made a decision, we need to go with what we've got. We've got a time constraint we've got to go with. You know, we could go back through all 69 of them and try to bring somebody in. We've got to analyze them again and all that. You know, we made a decision. Let's go forward with it.
No, I'll put in my two cents. I agree with Mr. Searcy on this. We have 69 candidates. We fully vetted them in our own way through the consultants. We decided, of those 69, these are our top five. Nothing has changed that. Whether you know, all the other candidates did not have a consensus support. There wasn't one other candidate that had three headlines, three pen reads. There wasn't one. I don't see how in the world that could change. In terms of having now a state candidate, I said something during the issue there that, you know, to me, an out-of-state candidate with no Florida experience means they better have been a superintendent and better have a really good track record as a superintendent. The ones that did have some kind of Florida experience didn't have that. You know what I'm saying? There was not that really good candidate out-of-state. I didn't think, the ones we discussed had never been superintendent. And I'm not going to bring somebody out of state who's never been a superintendent. And Bill Graham, you know, echoed that. So I can't imagine there being, I don't know what's happened. You know, once we did all our homework, I don't know what's happened. Like I said, if we got our top five, it's the top four. Those
we're
are
going to get down to top one.
And it's going to be down to one. And well, something interesting, this may be a little superfluous, but, you know, in conversations with Dr. Blanton and other people, both in 2011 and this year, you know, there is no magic number five. There have been several school districts that Dr. Plant has done where they look at, they do their homework, they do their, you know, you ask your questions, whatever, and it's very obvious, and they don't have 6 times. We had a very good group. And they come down to two people, and both these people are interested, and they know it's one. They only interview two people. There have been superintendent searches for only two people have been entered. In fact, as far as anybody can tell, the number five, part of the reason that became magic numbers because there's 5 days in the week. You could have a week of interviews and have an interview in the morning and, you know, go out and they could see the calendar during the afternoon. And so, you know, I'm comfortable with just moving forward. I don't think there's any reason to move with somebody, because it would have to be somebody that we didn't have consensus for to begin with.
Thank you.
Sean?
I just thought we should have the discussion because the police chief they're looking for, I guess, in Fort Pierce or Port St. Lucie, they narrowed their field from... And I was called to task, sort of, by, you know, a constituent. They narrowed theirs down to a final 10 that they're interviewing of 69. So they're saying we're only doing half as much, and now one drops out. So I thought that perhaps we should at least have the conversation. Should we consider another candidate?
But in that case, I doubt that they hired a consultant. It was the
Fair
city.
Enough.
Okay, so we Fair had enough. A consultant that did background investigation. So that's kind of... You know, and the other thing I was going to say is I think it just comes down to exactly what you said, Matt. There wasn't consensus because the other one was Dr. Wayne Glant, Dr. Wayne
Alexander.
Thank you. And he did an investigation. He wasn't happy with that. I called council members that said, he told me, whatever. So I came up with differently, but I didn't have consensus. So I think it really boils down to you're absolutely right. There's not consensus on anybody outside, and I say that three of the four candidates was on my top list, so it worked. I'm just saying you're right. We have consensus, and then we always have back to the drawing board if we... Because they better prove themselves. I mean, it's their time to, you know, show us.
I think we're still in good shape. Next thing is the questions. Remember, we talked about that last week. We're going to do some rewrites. We need to decide right now who is going to ask questions and in what order these are going to go in. I don't think the order matters much, but who wants to ask these questions? We have some rewrites going on. If we want to set it up where it just goes down the line three times and just, you know, we can start.
It's the easiest thing to do. We don't have to think.
Absolutely.
I
prefer that.
Think.
All right. So we just want to start with Mr. Searcy with question one and do it as is. So we go, who sits next? Mr. Frost.
Got it, my bad question.
Yeah, exactly. That's that one. Who sits next to you?
Me.
Dale.
Because you had asked me to, so I reworked this question, and you can either keep it. It was, what is your strategy for encouraging community dialogue and support? Well, that, you know, it's important, blah, 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 you know. So I reworked it to this, and let me know, can you describe a time when you needed community support and encourage and promote a dialogue? With a follow-up, what were some of the tools you used? And, you know, I can submit that Judy retype, it's better than an open question where you get a fluff answer. Would that be okay?
No, yeah, that's fine. A good one. Very good.
Thank you.
So that'll be my question.
Okay, and I'll get type it up.
Yeah, she'll do this for us.
She must have this, I hope, in a word or something. Thank you.
All right, do we want to discuss the rewrites, or we all care? We had a discussion on this one. So
I think that was the only one that you gave. You gave me homework, so I
we have. Yeah, each of us has our own assignment.
Plug in.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, of course, after that, you know, there's always going to be time for follow-up questions, and we'll go back and all right.
Okay.
Contracts. I know we had...
Wait a minute. What happened to the tax referendum? Are we going through the questions?
I just asked them, and we said we're fine with somebody rewriting it.
Just rewrite it.
Oh, no. I think we just... it's not going to take us a lot of time. I think we should go through this and make sure everybody knows what they're doing, and that at least we hear the rewrites.
Okay.
This is not going to take us a lot of time, Matt.
And all right.
I thought you meant that, you know, we were going to submit it.
I think we only had three or four that we were rewriting.
Yeah, there was one.
Okay,
yeah.
Sean,
okay, so who's doing
Dale,
the tax referendum? Is that you?
That's Charlie. I will do the FEFP one. I'll do it for them. The next thing was Sean. Tax referendum. That's Mr. Searcy's question.
Were we leaving? I wrote Sean.
No, rewriting anything.
I don't have that.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
No, I thought you had this one.
I had this.
What was the toughest issue you have addressed when a school board, with a school board, what was your role in resolving the issue when you said something about a split vote?
Right. Tell us how you handled a split vote and what impact, if any, it had on how you related to each board member.
Right, but we're skipping. Can we stay in order?
Sure, I'm sorry.
You're doing the FEFP, the board involvement. Who does that one? That one was up for a rewrite. And I was supposed to do that rewrite.
Right, that's Sean.
So that's Sean's.
I'm sorry, I didn't know I had that one.
No, that's yours to read.
Thank you.
All right,
thank you.
I'm so sorry to go.
Yeah, let me just do that. So Frost, Dale, Claudia, Charlie on the tax referendum, and Matt on the FEFP. Then you start again with Sean. Let's just keep doing that.
And so let me read the question and see if that works for you. What is the toughest issue you've addressed with a school board, and what was your role in resolving it? And as a follow-up, what were the characteristics of the board that were needed for your work together? So depending on what they answer, you can ask something about, you know, what kind of characteristics you're looking for. Okay, and then the next one would be who?
It would be Dale.
And then I had a rewrite on that one also. And I wasn't clear because I had asked about the principal question. And this is a good question. Please explain your philosophy on site management, chain of command, and evaluation of school principals. But I was asked to rewrite a question relative to principals.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the question. How have you identified and dealt with struggling principals in districts where you have worked? What criteria do you use to assign principals and APs, for example, requiring principal certificates? So that just goes straight to the point to address an issue that we're...
And thank you. That was perfect because we had shorted that with just move the problem question mark and you were going to rewrite it.
So do you want that one to go in there? Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. That would be Dale's question. The next one is Claudia's. About a tough issue with the board.
And that's where you want the split board?
Well, that was my suggestion, if that works for you. Tell us how you handled the split vote and what impact, if any, it had on how you related to each board member.
Can you share that with
Sure, I'll email it to you. Okay. Yeah,
all of these, when we're going to put them into Matt, right? We're going to give them to Judy, and she's going to rewrite, and then you'll send them to us before next week, Judy?
Sure. Thanks. Okay, great. All right, and the next
one. We're okay with the next one, which is Mr. Searcy's.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next would be mine, which is a negative professional experience.
Didn't say we were going to rework that.
We said Dale was going to rework
I had, and it's very minor. Yeah. I tweaked it. I'm glad I got it. So I wrote Matt next to the name, and then tell me about a negative experience in retrospect you have had and how you would handle it. And the second one, then the follow-up is how would you handle it now?
So how would you do it today?
Yeah, how would you do it today?
Yeah.
So I'm going to change. So how would you do it today?
Next up is Sean. We're okay with that one. Dale. Next one, we're okay with that one. Then it's Claudia, and you were going to rewrite it.
Yeah.
Under dealing with DSEG.
Right. Here's my rewrite. Have you worked in a district under a desegregation order? What were the challenges? What specific actions were taken to unitary status? So it depends on how they answer it, what those follow-ups are.
Okay. That worked out to be yours anyway.
Yeah.
All right. The last two we were okay with. Mr. Sears.
Charlie. And then you, Ben.
See, that was quick.
Okay.
All right. And get all those to Jude if you can. Next issue is a public notice regarding the public forums.
Can I hand these out? These are the restaurant.
We'll get there. A public notice regarding Dr. Adams suggested that this notice go out with the Friday updates. He just wants to know if there's any problem with that. Facilitator for the forum. This is, again, we're not in the room. This is when Dr. Adams has arranged for a facilitator, and we'll have a form in the back of the TEC for the slot to deposit comments. Is that right, Judy?
I'm sorry, I can't hear very well back here.
Are your ears plugged up? For the facilitator for the public forum portion of the interviews. Dr. Adams has set up a facilitator for that?
Yes, it'll be staff, people on staff that she's assigning.
Okay.
Different people to do it.
Okay, and then also somebody to, entertain spouses while the interview is going on.
That's not even applicable in this case. There won't be any spouses coming. There's one spouse that's coming, but she's going to be in the interview, and she's going to eat with you.
That's fine. Okay. And there'll be a form in the back of the TEC for people to fill out beforehand?
Yes, in a box that you put, fold it up. You don't have to put your name on it. Just fold it up and put it into the box, just like you did last time.
Okay.
What's the purpose of that?
So that they did it last time so that they knew that people could get questions answered. They could go through it, but also, what I understand, it wasn't real formal, was it, Ms.
No, formal, and the board gets a copy of the feedback from the community,
and that's during the interview.
Maybe after the interview.
Afterwards.
Yeah, and then there's a form for people to fill out,
And our facilitators are going to take those forms, and they're going to ask questions of these people.
Go ahead, Judy.
Okay. Mr. Seabury, what will happen is, for example, Mr. McCain will be standing in here. People will be gathering, and they'll come up to speak to him just very casually. Nothing sitting down, just casually. And the facilitator will make sure that the candidate's time is not taken up with one person. That's the purpose in the facilitator, just to move it along.
But the questions go in the box, is what I'm aware of.
No, comments, like, for example.
Afterwards.
Whatever that person felt, the community member felt that she or he would like the board members to know.
That's okay. Just didn't quite understand if they were in the box.
I think we need a clarification here. The form that you're talking about is the form that they fill out while we're interviewing the candidates, and it has four different areas. We all get copies for each candidate. We're going to get a stack for Mr. Lean, for such and thus. When they meet informally at the community reception, I do not recall when we did the search for Dr. Adams getting any feedback from the community input. There was no feedback from anybody. Ms. Vasquez never shared with the board what people were saying about each of the candidates. So I think we're confusing the two opportunities. One is written and specific. The other one, maybe this, where the, if this is a new decision, then whoever the staff person is going to share some kind of comments with the board, but that would be very subjective.
Yes.
Based on whoever's the facilitator, so I don't know if you want to talk about that.
We didn't do it because Dr. Adams, we were sitting up there, interviewed Dr. Adams, and went boom, straight into the selection. We're not doing that this time. I think that was a good idea.
So will you, as the chair, before we could, in the introduction of the interview, remind the public that there are forms for comments in the
sure.
back? Okay, good. Then that takes care of that.
But that's when we get to the formal piece. Okay. And I thought we were on the piece, the informal gathering, before we got our two-hour shot out.
We don't get any feedback from the informal.
We did, through the comment section. We got those afterwards.
If they stay,
now. Yeah,
take the time.
Somebody could come for the fifth, for the informal public meeting. Mm-hmm. Write out your comments, put them into it, and then Judy copies them all, and we get them.
Very understandable. That's clear.
All right. The date for the final selection, it requires a 7-day notice. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we need to figure out a date to have that. If we get all, and it looks like we'll have all four interviews done that first week, so we can do it the following week. Do we have time on that following Tuesday available? I don't know.
That doesn't give us 7 days.
We can notice it.
Why don't you go ahead and notice it? If you want to do it on
today.
Thursday after we finish up on Wednesday or Friday, days in advance, say it's going to be selection.
We absolutely
can.
Something happens with one of the candidates and we have to push back and interview something crazy, we can change it. Is that okay with everybody? The Thursday after the last interview?
Yeah. Thursday.
Excuse me. Thursday the next day. The interviews are Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, correct?
I have meetings in the morning and I have a 1 o'clock. That Thursday's not going to work for me unless you do it after 2 o'clock.
Can we do a 4?
Yeah, I can do a 4 o'clock on Thursday.
Or 5?
How long did it take last time?
It did not take long at all. And that's another thing we need to do.
Because the decision's made.
Your decision at that point, you've had a night to sleep on the last interview. You should know something. It depends on, if there's any discussion to be had, it depends on how long people want to talk. Yeah.
Special call meeting, 6 o'clock on Thursday?
Yeah.
That'd be fine. Judy, you got that?
4 o'clock.
Six o'clock. 0500.
Don't confuse her. 6 o'clock. And I think that's good because people who have been participating all along, may want to attend.
Yeah, and that's fine. And we'll get to you in just a second, Dale. The last time, the one last thing I've got is everybody understands and is comfortable with the selection process, the mathematics of it. We can do it any way you want. I keep saying that the way we were going to do it, and I will come up with some to make it my life easier on me this time. I'll have some little forms with four candidates. Now, usually, let's just assume there was five candidates at this time. You select 1, 2, 3, your top three. 3 points for number one, 2 points for number two, 1 point for your number three. Okay, I put it in the chart. Add up the numbers. Okay, the idea there is to get down to two candidates. Once you get down to two candidates, it's one or the other.
Straight up down.
Okay? Yeah. Whatever. It's just a hand vote at that point. These are public record, so we will have names on them.
Yes.
You have to put your names on them. You have to own them. And we'll do with that. Now, what happened last time is, and these should be two votes. One straw vote on paper, one by hand. What happened last time is we had one candidate who was number one, and then 1 point behind me, two of them tied for number two. So at that point, what we did is, okay, the other two drop off. Now we have a second straw vote, which is the top three. And I think we said, give me your top two. And then at that point, not flama, see what answer at that point, but by that time, one other person dropped out. We were down to Wayne and Fran and moved on. Okay? Everybody all right with that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I better bring a coin with you in case.
I may have.
The city had to do that a while back in selecting the mayor, and when the coin hit the floor, it stood up.
Stood on edge.
It did, I promise you that.
I I may bring a laptop with its real quick Excel spreadsheet, because I was scared of that last time, because I had made a math error. And
calculators.
We'll
calculators.
Okay, in terms of restaurants, in talking with Mr. Gresta, we need to have, in order to comply with Sunshine, we need to have notes. Ms. Stang will be joining us. Okay, that way she does not have to take, it won't be anything verbatim, she does not have to, Ms. DeGresta, you might want to jump in here, as to what we need to do.
Yes, the meal component, if you will, is a continuation of your interview process. It's in a more informal setting, but it's still a portion of your interview process. So we need to continue the minutes aspect of the public, the Sunshine Law. So someone needs to be, ding, you're going to be the recorder, and Ms. Stang is the one that, you've selected for your meeting minutes for this particular school board. So she just needs to take, broad minutes, certainly not every question or everything that you talk about or talk, whatever you're going to be talking about, but just broad minutes about the meeting, when it started, when it ended, that sort of thing.
And the other thing is, our other guest will be...
Your other guest? Oh. Next week I'm out of town, I'm afraid. So Amy Pitch, who is a lawyer in my office, who covered a board meeting for me about 2 years ago when I had to be out sick, she will be in attendance with you next week for this, and she can help you with any questions or comments or issues that come up. So she's covered these types of board meetings.
She's there to make sure we don't get ourselves in trouble with either questions or Sunshine. Nothing to discuss it, that, business or anything like that. It'll just be an informal kind of thing, and that covers us.
We didn't do this last time, so has the Sunshine Law been modified since we did this with Dr. Adams? Because we didn't do any notes and we didn't have anyone there. So were we in violation when we... Because you were on our attorney at the time, and that was not an issue. So is that a modification of Sunshine Law that we need to adhere with now that we didn't know about?
I'm not sure that I can answer that. I don't... Was last time this a continuation of your interview process?
It was the same thing.
Okay.
So we're just...
Then I'm sure the... Well...
we're doing things a little... We're just making sure. Making sure there's no...
What's the penalty for that? I thought that, for you board members that were here.
But Dale, you have...
Yes.
All that.
I had made
seven,
it for
eight,
but there's going to be nine with Mr. Rendell somebody wants to. So we'll go back and change. And I did want to just quickly discuss the times. The last one will not be pertinent because Mr. Rodriguez is no longer candidate. So it's C.J. Cannon's for the lunch the first day, the patio the second, the evening. Bocce Trattoria, and some of these were on the other list, and then Osceola Bistro was the Garden Bistro. I went to all of them. Italian Grill is not in there because the candidate, but if somebody, that was a dinner, so if somebody wants to switch, I could care less, but we will have to up the reservation for, I made it freight because of the attorney and a spouse. But if there wasn't a spouse, it was going to be seven. Now there's going to be nine. So I will fix that. And also I want to draw your attention to the time. It was the 2 hours for lunch, so I did 1 and 6. I will gladly call back because now I have the blueprint here. You want me to call back and do 12:30, 5:30, that's up to you. Obviously, I got to change times. But I just didn't know what to make a safe time for us to all get there. We were allowing 2 hours. I wasn't here. Was the 2 hours more than enough? You really want me to do 12:30? Don't know what to say.
I remember one of the interviews going the full 2 hours. At least one did go. I think we're okay.
Just leave it like that.
Yeah.
So I'll just up the number and call back.
When you call back, say, we may be a few minutes early.
Yeah.
We're just eliminating the last one.
Yeah, I have to be flexible because I don't want to sit here and be worried about I need to go to lunch. I want to be able to interview as needed, and we shouldn't be rushing through it to get to lunch.
But that's why in the last schedule they did 12:30 and I did 1. I did 1.
Can you be flexible in the time you put on the notice that we're going to meet between 12:30 and 1:30 for lunch?
I think it's all part of the same. We don't have to have a starting point.
It's a continuation.
Okay.
Can you use the word approximately, and then that covers that?
Or if you wish to give yourself a little more leniency, what you've done in the past is you've put immediately following the interview, we'll adjourn to X place for...
Do you hear that, Judy, for the...
For the meal portion.
The only thing I have to add is the candidates have asked to have some breathing space between. Just a little bit of downtime.
Yeah, and that will be an hour. That'll be fine.
Try it out.
You know, in all four of these, they're locally owned places.
Okay.
Where is this bocce thing here?
Do you know where it used to be the French Quarter, right next door to the French Quarter, right across from...
From Burp? Which is the old Super Dip.
Oh, it's the old Super Dip.
The old Super Dip, which is now called Burp, right across the street from that little...
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's
a
four-way stop.
Yeah, okay.
They, you know, weather permitting, there's outside dining there. The same thing with the garden.
Yeah, it used to be Tomcat.
Okay. Yeah, we walked, my building's right.
Tomcat.
It
used to be
Tomcat.
That's back
in
the corner.
It is.
Yeah.
It's in that building.
Okay, we're fine.
Somebody give Mr. Searcy a ride so we can get off.
Be able to get there.
Just don't talk about any board business, otherwise, no.
Okay. I think that's all I have. So this is our last formal get together before interviews next week. Does anybody have anything else to bring up? Obviously, if something comes up, you know, email Judy, whoever you got. All right.
You did say something earlier on about the contract.
Oh, I apologize.
Yes, please.
That's on here. I started to talk about that and then got way late on my own. ADD.
This is a minor thing, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. You are all emailed copies of Dr. Adams' current contract. When we advertised for this, all it said was a salary parameter. It's the same salary parameter that Dr. Adams was working on. I can tell you, if you looked at some of the historical, back before I was on the board, back when money was just flowing, those superintendent contracts, not just here, everyone, they were just loaded with that. They had car allowances and cement and stuff like that. Obviously, in the financial situation we were then and pretty much still are, all that got stripped away. And that was not only financial, but for also because of the public's just outrage over some of the things that we could have. Got a chance to look over the contract. If there's anything, obviously, once we get down to a selection, there'll be a negotiation. Last time Fran had used Russ Peterson, so I'd been talking to Russ Peterson, and Larry Brown was the thing. That's right, you weren't the attorney.
I didn't attend the interview process.
Yeah, no, that was Larry Brown. Yeah, because I was talking to Larry and talking to Russ Peterson and talking to Fran behind Russ's back.
Say that in public?
Oh, yeah. Russ knows it. He called me. After we got it done, Russ called me and says, did he talk to Fran Wells? He didn't. I said, yeah. And he goes, I'm going to kill you. We're fine with Russ for a while. Anywho's, squirrel. What we need to know is, is there anything in the contract you want out? If there's anything that is fair game going into negotiations you want in, if there's anything you need to do, if there's anything you want the contract changed, now is the time to have that conversation. Because once we make the decision, the negotiations start. Dale?
I had a question for the attorney. First question, though, for us, is there's a May evaluation due on Fran. I think we should do it anyway if she ever, as an exit, because what if she ever wants to get back into the field of something? We should complete that work. That's in the contract, that May is the evaluations. So, first of all, I'm happy with the contract, but I have a question that I thought was odd, and I know that I haven't received, I didn't know if it was contract language, but every year the superintendent will get a physical and submit that paper to the board that she's healthy enough to perform her duties. I don't remember getting that in the last year. And it's in the contract.
So if that's in the contract and we're not using that, should we remove it? That's the only thing about the contract that I felt was...
It needs to be in the contract.
Yeah. Well, then we need to follow the contract.
Agreed.
So that, but the contract was fine, but I never saw that physical, and I also know that we have the May coming up. Everything in the contract was fine by me. Even if it's a, you know, we, you know, it's obviously not for, the evaluation is not for performance improvement on Dr. Adams, but it's also for closing the books, and I think that we should do one. However, when we get past the hiring, I think it should be done.
When will you start negotiations, Matt?
The next day. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it will be between Ms. DeGresta and their attorney. Ms. DeGresta will talk to me about, all right, this is what they're saying. Then we will, you know, if there's something that needs to be, if there's something that we've already been authorized, that we've already had the discussion, we said, yeah, we're willing to go up to, you know, with the salary range. Obviously, you know, we're not going to do that. If there's something else, hey, listen, he or she would like this, I will not agree to, and I will not let Ms. DeGresta agree to anything that we have not discussed. So we will discuss that in the sunshine via either public emails or the next time we get together, depending on timing. But that's kind of the way it works. But, you know, we need to know what, before we go into it, what are we willing to give? I mean, right now, you know, we're not going to offer anything other that's not in Fran's contract right now. And then if they come back with something else.
So we will be having a board meeting the Tuesday after. If we select them on Thursday, we'll be having a board meeting. And you can always put an emergency item in if we need to discuss that. I don't know if we can discuss that in executive session or if we discuss it.
In the public.
Okay.
But contract negotiation in the public.
I mean, we'll
yes,
be having one of these meetings.
Yes.
So the 24th?
Yeah, that will be. Tuesday and spring break. Yeah, we have.
Can you just put that on the agenda and then have it removed?
Do we have a board? Do we have a discussion session that day, Judy?
No.
No, we do not have a discussion session, but we can always set one.
Or you can put it on discussion tonight.
We can put it on discussion tonight. You know, it might be condone itself a little more to this setting. Mm-hmm. I would think because.
If we hire the person and it's a settlement on salary, isn't that an action item and we put it on the action item?
Oh, it's going to happen. Yeah, it's contract. Oh, yeah, absolutely. The contract has to be approved.
So it would be there and then we can discuss it and amend it? And mm-hmm. Right?
Sounds right. Yeah.
I mean, isn't that how it works? If we have a person on Thursday, mm-hmm. you know, discussion, we won't have the parameters of a contract to bring it forward by Tuesday. Mm-hmm. There's no way.
Okay.
It'll go. I would assume. But that Tuesday, hopefully, we'll have some feedback from them to bring to the board to say, okay, here's where we are. There's, you know,
sure.
That.
So we'll have the second or third counter and
exactly. And you know, and it's kind of more. It's not like collective bargaining where it's this. You know,
right.
You put this.
Yeah.
It's informal between the parties, but certainly we're not going to agree to anything. You guys haven't, because one thing, it wouldn't get approved anyway.
So then when would we have the time? Will you give us that feedback at the board meeting?
Well,
or are we going to set another meeting?
That's what I'm saying. Why don't we have a short discussion session at 5
yeah.
mm-hmm. that day?
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Okay.
Okay.
The only thing is that they got to get this room ready for it.
We can meet in one of the conference rooms.
And that has to be open.
But they could
still open.
Oh, okay.
Sure.
Okay, so what we'll do, Judy, put on the agenda a 5 o'clock discussion session, if needed, before the 6 o'clock board meeting on the 20, whatever that
fourth.
Is.
Fourth.
Okay. 5 o'clock discussion session, if needed,
yep.
on the 24th of March.
Yeah, you got it. And then, well, would that be the 19th just for that Thursday? You already got that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything else? Yes, ma'am.
Just as a matter of information, and many of you are probably already aware of this, but the one aspect of Dr. Adams' agreement that will have to be revised has to do with the severance pay. Years ago, there was no statutory restriction on the amount of severance pay put in an employment agreement. The law was changed, I think, maybe 4 years ago, and there is now a cap by statute of 20 weeks. So not more than 20 weeks of pay can be paid to someone like a superintendent position with regard to severance. So that aspect of this employment agreement will have to be revised to comply with the statutory requirement. But otherwise, that's the only thing that has to be revised, you know, whether you liked it or not. Sorry.
Thank you.
I mean, obviously it has to be revised. If there's any thoughts on that? Okay. Are we all good?
Mm-hmm.
All right. What the hell,
we're
Fran,
doing
we're
good.
Wait a year. All right. Back to your staff. Ms. Jimenez, you're in lead off today.
Okay. Actually, Dr. Adams is supposed to be here for some of these,
yeah.
But I'll choose one that doesn't require her presence.
Yeah.
I'll go with number two until she arrives. This is basically the County Commission Children's Services Advisory Council did and paid for an assessment to be done kind of on the state of children in Indian River County. And Hope Woodhouse, who is the CSAC chair, has been doing presentations to different groups in the community with the results of this assessment. And I think because we work with children, it would really be worthwhile for the board to hear the presentation, and it could be done during a discussion session, or I would think it might be best done before a school board meeting as a presentation so that the community also has an opportunity to hear the results, and we'd have to find out how long it is. But I didn't want to approach her if I didn't, you know, the board was not interested in hearing the results of the assessment.
Have they made any presentations to the county on their board meetings yet? I mean, as far as getting the message out to the public.
I think so. I know they've gone to John's Island, they've gone to different groups, and this was paid for by the county commission, so I'm sure they presented it to them.
No, what I mean is, did the county commission have this presentation before their board so that it has already been televised?
Oh, I don't know. I can find out.
I mean, just, yeah. If, you know, sometimes you can overdo things, but if they have,
I think Suzanne
paid presentation.
I called it a good day.
Not speaking against it, though.
Right.
But
so, you know, is there any interest in having her
come? How long is the presentation?
I'd have to ask her. She has a PowerPoint. I'd say maybe 10 minutes long, 10 to 15 minutes. I haven't sat through it myself, but I've seen the PowerPoint.
I mean, I wouldn't mind sitting through the presentation. You got to wonder, though, it's probably not enough there to have a full-blown workshop or something. Mm-hmm. Or do you want to have it as part of a discussion group? Mm-hmm. You know, or like I said, part of the, if it's short enough, part of the meeting, that wouldn't matter. But I don't think it would be something to stand alone by itself.
So maybe what I can do is find out how long it is, and if it's less than 15 minutes, we can do it at a board meeting. If it's a little longer, we'll converse about it, and maybe just as part of a discussion, it could be presented. Would people be amenable to that?
If it's 15 minutes or less, can we just have a schedule for the discussion?
Agreed.
It's fine. That's fine. Okay.
For the discussion?
Okay. All right, Ms. Simchek.
I know it's real simple. It says it really just clearly right there. I know I've sat here and we've gotten some things from either staff or something where there's no PowerPoint, and I see our audience and our people, small or large group that are coming, are very lost, not being able to follow anything. If staff is making us a copy of something.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we're making copies for other board members, can we be courteous and put half a dozen to a dozen at the back, whether it's a, you know,
not a board meeting, but a discussion or workshop,
sure,
like the minority versus poverty. That would, you know, there was some there, but a couple in the back. It's a very simple fix, but I think that the public is really it's rude not to, and I think the public would really appreciate it. So that's really simple. I don't think there's a problem with that.
Except for one thing, this is a meeting of the board for us to try to figure out what's going on. And I appreciate them all being here, but.
Well, let me put it to you this way: the charter school board that we discussion that came, there was charts and given around here, and nobody in the audience had that. And then they got to do a public records request, and then it's so I'm saying, not my notes. Do I want to give you know, or something like that? But if staff is bringing stuff, I mean, obviously we're still not letting them talk. No, can we at least give them some paperwork since they took the time out, if it's provided to us? That's all. You know, I mean,
and printed is good, but along with any workshop agenda, I think is also helpful. Online, next, you know, is a hyperlink.
This is your discussion period. Yeah, right. You know, if you want the public to have, you know, things that are being discussed, that sometimes it's draft, sometimes it's final, you know, sometimes it's things in the works, but, yeah.
Well, and it's, I'm sorry, I was just going to say, and it's also common sense. If something's really bulky, really big,
right,
like those
things this morning,
I would want to have the stack that I was talking about.
No, I think using common sense, but I do think that that's part of transparency. It is public record anyway, and it really sends the message to the public that we want them to be involved and we want them to understand the conversation. So, I support it with the caveat that we need common sense around it because we couldn't make all this stuff from this morning available to the audience. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mr. Frost, you have anything?
I do, and I apologize for not putting it on here. As I went to the thing, and I'll give you the full committee report down in Fort Pierce with the Council of Treasure Coast Regional Council, and all of Ward Florida is on everyone's minds. And I just wonder if there's any interest in doing something to the point that we're concerned about child safety, as far as all of Ward Florida goes. A letter.
Any discussion?
Yeah, before Ms. Disney came off the board, the board had requested information about the impact to any of our schools. So it might be worthwhile, since we have new board members, for that information to be shared with the board so we know where we stand in terms of the school district and the train. So do we have any information, Dr. Adams?
Well, transportation had gathered together some information, and actually there have been a couple of groups that have asked for crossings. How many times do, you know, buses cross? And so that information has been provided. So we have provided, you know, some information in the past when requested, but the board hadn't taken a stand on the issue.
So it was also my understanding that Ms. Disney sat on the MPF, and just like any city or county representative, that's all collectively talked about safety and traffic issues. And I had asked her if it's safety and traffic, and I can't remember, so you're going to have to refresh me, but I thought that she was bringing it up, and MPO was the time and place that, you know, when I sit as the liaison to Sebastian Planning and Zoning, I don't have a vote, whereas she had a vote for it, by the way, with MPO. That's where you say this is where it is, and I thought that she was utilizing that, and I could be wrong, as that was the time and place for her to talk about traffic, whether it's pedestrian.
Mm-hmm. And we did talk about that.
Or also,
no walkers.
This work might have been done.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't know. That's
And wait a minute. I don't want the train in here any more than anybody else does. I just hesitate saying, you know, putting our names to something because the safety is not really as safety. I mean,
okay.
You understand what I'm saying?
I do.
But if we can come up with something, I support it.
Okay, so just before we move on for clarification, then Dr. Adams, when transportation collected and shared all that information, and Ms. Disney was representing the school district relative to how the train could impact safety and traffic relative to students, did the school district have any concerns that the board needs to be aware of?
No. We provided data but we didn't put a concern around it. Here's the data. You wanted to know this. Walkers, if you remember, we had that discussion. We didn't have any students that were, so there was nothing that rose to. We provided the data, but it did not come up as a red flag in terms of numbers.
So then to follow up, Matt, to your point, we have no safety or traffic concerns to rally behind, and we shouldn't get involved because it becomes more of a personal, mm-hmm. do you like it, do you like it, do you like it, and
right.
that's not really what we're here for, to represent our personal interests.
Mm-hmm. No. I don't know, unless the board wants to do it, it's my only thought that because, that would turn into a gray area. I was going to say pedestrian traffic of students. You would think the parents would be driving, whether I'm a parent or I'm not a parent, if I'm driving over a railroad track. You know what I'm saying? But maybe youth pedestrian traffic is a concern. I have no idea where we want to go with that, but as a letter drafted by the board of any traffics.
Gifford Middle. That was the area that Ms. Disney was
right.
focusing on, because so many students in the community, when my kids were there, the kids that were coming in that were bused weren't the ones with the issue. It was the local kids that walked to and from schools, and that's where there was concern that there would be a problem for the safety of those students, but according to the district, that's not.
Yeah, I think they did look at that specifically in terms of were there any walkers in that area that would be crossing mm-hmm. the tracks, like if
we're And I think that also we have to take a look, and I'm only going by what I hear. I believe that they're looking for silent signals. That's what I heard, silent signals, silent areas where the gates just lock, but they're... and I'm not sure. So if that changed, again, I would be concerned about pedestrian youth traffic at Gifford Middle. But that's, I don't know how to leave it be.
Keep that on your...
I will.
Yeah.
Thank you.
There's plenty of time. So.
All right. I'm listed next. The only other thing I have is tomorrow there is an NPO meeting at 10 o'clock. I ain't going. I'm not going.
It's one in Palm Beach, right?
No, it's at a county administration building.
Building here.
Oh.
Yeah. It is a voting thing, and it's not... I got up at 3:30 this morning, and I'll be doing the same thing tomorrow. Ms. Simchek is the alternate. She can't go. Is there any interest in... Does anybody want to...
I'm in Tallahassee.
If nobody goes, then they do it.
Was there anything on the agenda that...
I don't think there's anything. They got canceled last month, which was awesome.
Isn't that on the agenda in Tallahassee to try to eliminate the NPOs?
Maybe find them if they did. I have no idea.
Regional planning.
The regional planning area is
on the potential chopping block. They're going to defund it.
I don't think there's anything
possible anymore.
Okay. Mr. Searcy?
We've got an item we've got to handle tonight that would involve some safety issues at various schools, and I would like to suggest that we think about having a complete review of all of our campuses and facilities by someone outside the school district to see if we have any issues that need to be addressed. Obviously, the one we're going to be discussing tonight might have been known by our district, but we didn't address it to get it corrected. But I would just think that it would save us a lot of money if we could go ahead and do due diligence now and find out what safety issues that can be corrected and address them before they become a problem. And the second piece of that is, especially the Citrus Bowl, I don't know if you folks have been to a ball game lately, my recollection, and I've been to the University of Florida where they have bottles, and I see folks falling on them all the time. And I'm a little bit concerned that we have Coke bottles in the stadium over there. We should go back to ice and cups, because if you have one of those
plastic bottles
with a plastic cap on it and you step on it, it's like a rolling pin. It's history. So I don't want to change what they're doing, but in this, no offense to attorneys and all, well, maybe offense to attorneys,
we're setting ourselves up for problems. And we just need to look at that and see if there's something we can do to be proactive as far as safety issues go.
I'm going to turn that over to Dr. Adam. We actually did this. We went through a huge safety audit of all the facilities.
We have a report.
A couple years ago.
I was given the report when I started, I think.
So
let's at least talk a little bit about the process.
It's not public information for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you can get a report of it.
But yeah. We still have the bottles that.
Right.
And I thought he
mentioned that to me, so I think that.
And that's also government interference telling you now,
right.
Can you have a water bottle? Can you have let's stay away from micromanaging. We're the ones that say we don't want the government telling us what to do, and here we are saying we're not going to allow you to
yeah,
do
that.
Sure. So we have to be very careful with that.
I think you've got to look at the bigger picture, though.
All right.
Pete Copeman. So actually, you have had some outside folks. So talk to the board about
I want to make sure we're talking about the same language. We're talking about safety audits. Every year, we do a annual fire safety sanitation inspection of all the facilities. It covers OSHA, covers obviously fire. Covers sanitation, a lot of the health code rules that the health department, we actually supersede those. So that's done every year. Is that what we're talking about here?
No, we're talking about the audit, the one we had outside consultants come in. Mm-hmm. Who was that?
We had a security audit done by outside.
All right, I wasn't sure. That's why we make sure we got the right language going on here.
No, it was the security audit.
A clarification, though. Mr. Searcy is talking about something very specific. He's talking about a safety inspection. So the question is, how is it possible when we have been saying that we are all about student safety, how is it possible that a safety inspection was overlooked that resulted in an item on tonight's agenda?
What is the item on tonight's agenda?
Dr. Adams can speak to that as much as we are able because it's
an injury at a school site resulting in a claim.
Well, okay. And Mr. Agresta, can you talk to, I recall that there was something, that there was language relative to what needed to be done and it wasn't done. And that's where the concern I have is. That if we're supposed to do an inspection, and that inspection is not done, and I don't know where you address it because everything. Do we address it after the vote tomorrow? Do we put it on an item to speak?
It is my understanding that the area that we're speaking of has been cordoned off because it's not usable. My understanding is that I have some information that the materials that were to be used. For that surface area, we're apparently lifting up. We did notice that there's a different coloration there now, so we're researching to find out if a different material was used on top of that material to make sure, but we did cordon off that area. We are making sure that we probably are going to plan a summer project to get that rectified.
So what do we proactively do? So regarding hard courts and that type of thing? Because there is we want to be sure. This is more of a proactive thing.
Yeah. Well, this is something new that's new to my department this year. Mm-hmm. So we go out. Previously, my department only conducted the fire inspections. We didn't do the safety and sanitation. So that came on board this year in my department. But we go out probably in October. We start the process, go through all the schools. Then we do a re-inspection somewhere around February. And then after that, we don't go out again. There's different inspections all throughout the year. We do playgrounds and portable classrooms and so forth at different times. But we're not out every day. So if something is gone wrong or broken or something, that's not something we don't inspect every day or every week. We got 2.8 million square feet of building that we look at, plus all the grounds, so it's not something we're able to do every week.
Well, I know there's been a lot of recovering of hard courts over the years.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I mean, a lot.
Project.
So, I guess the question is, this is new to you, but what's the process in place? Because I know that a lot of park courts have been covered before, so I'm thinking there's inspection.
In your board policy, it is required of the facilities director and the physical plant director to visit schools and do a walkthrough. In fact, they just finished them up last month. And we compile that information with also the life, health, safety issues. And the life, health, safety issues go to the top of the list, so to speak, for funding as we go down through that list. So that's sort of the process that happens behind the scenes. And then we bring it forward to the school board when we do our five-year capital workshop. You may remember we brought forward some fire safety issues at Treasure Coast, which was rectified. And at Vero Beach High School, we rectified those by bringing those to the school board. So that's kind of the behind-the-scenes work that takes place before you sit.
What brought this one to the head, the issue that we've got to take care of tonight, that to me is not really good business. It's reactive instead of proactive. And I hate to get on finance guy, what I always do. But it's a huge deal because of the folks out there that will do anything in the world to sue somebody with the money the school districts have. And it doesn't matter what we settle for. Tallahassee will say, well, you got to pay them. No matter if you only have $1 million, you got to pay them $10 million.
I will say to you that due to the reorganization and the leadership in the building department, that the processes that we have in place now and the expertise that we now have on board, you do have a better system today than you had 2 years ago. I will say that unequivocally.
Well, a follow-up question. You said you do some inspections or something in October and then later on?
Yeah, we start in October.
What's the matter with the summer whenever nobody's around?
Excellent question.
Well, we do the portable classroom inspections in the summer because that's something we can do without students in the classroom. Fire safety and safety and sanitation inspections, although it involves exit lights and emergency lighting and things like that, also involve people, whether they're blocking the exits with their debris, whether they're bringing in loads and loads of combustibles into the classrooms, are there bottles that have chemicals that aren't labeled properly, extension cords, the bulk of it seems to be what people do. So that's why we need the school occupied to get an idea of how they're using it, and then we can educate them on what the rules are.
And it appears that this surface had deteriorated and that's, ended up, partially causing this issue, or maybe
yes,
majorly causing this issue. So I know that there are inspections going on out there, how they get to the top of the list. The other thing I would say is hard courts are something that are used every day at night. There's just, it's one of those areas that probably yearly we'd ought to be sure that we've checked every single one of them.
Correct.
Sure.
I've redone a couple of them over the last couple of years.
Oh, yes, I know for sure.
Right.
Are there others with that same issue
so
today that are in trouble?
That's what we need to be.
Okay. I'm aware of that.
Part of that, you're saying hard courts. That sounds like recreation equipment and things like that. Part of the work that the gentleman you met this morning, Mr. Romole, he is our playground inspector. We are actually developing a checklist for playgrounds. We didn't have one before, so it's in my department. We're taking care of that. And it'll go on a regular rotation. So if there's something that's not being seen throughout the year, he's going to be seeing it throughout the year because playgrounds are inspected more than once a year. It's according to manufacturer, so he's going to be looking at the hoops. He's going to be looking
and
at
you
the
have some sort of computer thing so that the site-based managers could
we've
got a problem here.
Yeah, we upgraded the technology significantly that when Mr. Copeman is on site, all the codes are applicable, and you can check off and email that report to the site administrator prior to leaving, or you can print out.
Or the site administrator can report something.
There's also work orders.
Yes, there's work orders.
Put the work orders in if you can see something.
Yeah.
That's the start of it.
Response does that site administrator get to those issues?
Violation. It would depend upon what it is. For example, if you've got, and I'm seeing thunder a little bit, if you've got too many extension cords in a bank or something blocking an exit, that's marked with an over operational, and they know that they should take care of that immediately, and they do because we go back for inspections. If it's something that is a maintenance item, then that is forwarded on to the maintenance department, and the physical plant takes care of that through the school due process that we have for reporting work orders. If it's something facility-related, then that goes to Mr. Sanders' office, and we put that in the five-year plan and try to address it that way. So there's different levels of response, but the principals are very good at getting the operational items that we mark corrected.
If it's a safety issue, we're going to put it in the five-year plan?
No. I didn't say that. Operational, like, and I use the example of too many extensions in a bank. If it is a safety issue, it's corrected before he leaves the site.
Okay. If it's a severe life
severe
safety,
life
and then there's different levels of that. If it's something needs to be corrected by the school, they write it up. Mm-hmm. They have a correction period. It also has to do with some funding. There might be some capital improvement needs to be done. I'm going through my brain trying to think of a capital improvement item. That goes to Mr. Sanders. It could be something that's deteriorating that all of a sudden we noticed.
Resurfacing the
that would sounds like a maintenance item.
I think that's what I was getting at. You know, you talked about the checklist for the playground. This was not a playground situation.
Yeah.
It was a hard court situation. So now you're saying that that's not safety, that's maintenance. I think it's important for us to understand where that resides, because it's not about any blaming. It's about identifying a problem.
Yes.
And figuring out how moving forward this problem does not happen again. And if this is not on anyone's radar, because it's not in this department or that department, then we're going to continue with that problem. So where will this reside? Is it maintenance or is it safety?
Which part? There's
the
going to be
court,
the
all the hard courts,
right,
beyond the playgrounds.
My checklist. Inspector will go out and inspect all the equipment. As the program progresses, right now they're going out and doing playgrounds.
Does that include hard courts?
Yeah. It will. It'll include hard courts. It'll include basketball goals, soccer goals, football. So it'll be all the recreational equipment. It's a little more extreme than what the American Playground Handbook does, but who else is going to look at it? So as that come on, that's the inspection side of it. Those reports will go to maintenance saying you need to fix this, or if it's something the school needs to fix, they need to. It goes to them. It actually goes to everybody at the same time, and then they choose. They pick out their responsibilities off the report. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So reflecting back, we have a better system now, and we have a better process now for identifying those things that are life, health, safety, and move those to the top of the list, and we fund those first as priority.
And I do apologize. I took your issue with security, and we did have a big security audit. If you haven't gotten a quick copy of it yet,
I don't remember getting. But I do understand that they're making some changes to some entrances to try to get
single point of entry.
That's
I think it's really good.
Mm-hmm. That was part of this big report.
That's some guidelines that we talked about this morning.
Yeah,
that's one of the guidelines.
Moving on, Ms. Menas?
Yes, I'd like to follow up on the item that I brought up when we had the last expulsion about ways of serving students that are expelled so that they don't get further behind. And I had recommended looking into the possibility of, I don't know if it's homebound or home-based, but anything that we can do to academically support that student so that when they come back to us, they're not further behind. And I thought Dr.
Right. Actually, I am proud to say that we've only expelled one student this year. Okay, and it was a student who had been given a chance. You know, you read the background on that. And so the student gets expelled in February. So the concern is, well, what happens with the student, you know, beyond that? Because they do lose the privilege and the right to come to the school. So a couple of things that we've talked about. One, Mrs. Jimenez had asked me to look into, well, what's the cost? The only services that we have ever provided in the past are students for ESC students, which by the IEP, Individual Education Plan, you know, you may be required to do that. And the cost of that is, for an ESC student, it's usually about 3 hours a week. Okay, so for 9 weeks, it would be about almost $900, okay, for a 9-week period, 3 hours a week. We do have a rate. We pay the teachers' rate of pay. I guess one of the concerns I have about with an expelled student is that it's not just a matter of paying somebody to go there, but other people are required to be part of that process, and that is the teachers whose classroom the student just came out of, and getting the work from them and providing that to the teacher. So you are still involving the schools from which the student was expelled. The other thing I talked to Mrs. Jimenez about, and which I think is a good alternative, is the student who gets expelled does have the opportunity to go to summer program, okay? So we want to be sure that the family and the student both know that once the school year has ended, the student has, if transportation is provided, has the opportunity to get transportation to a site to do course credit recovery. We have a boot camp in the summer for students who need additional help on Algebra 1, you know, to pass the Algebra 1. So they qualify to do that, but sometimes you lose contact with that student, so the goal would be to maintain contact with that student. And I think we could do that with the social worker that's at the site that has a relationship with a student. And so my suggestion is that we use our social worker at the site to maintain contact with the student and to provide support to the family by saying, now, remember, you can come to the summer program. Here's where it begins. Here's the site you could go to. Secondly, if the family and the child want to enroll in a virtual class, you know, give them some support on how to do that. They wouldn't be enrolled under Indian River County School District, but they would be. They do have that opportunity to take advantage of that. So, again, it's maintaining that contact through a person at the school, who the social worker is probably the person, and remind them that summer school is available, and also support them if they wish to get involved in a virtual class. So that's my recommendation.
Yeah, I just want to thank you for following up on that. And, you know, I think because there are so few children that are expelled, this is better than nothing. One thing that I did want to follow up that has been brought to my attention now that we're doing the pilot for the restorative justice is the issue of suspensions. How many children are we suspending throughout the school year? What are the trends and what are the demographics? Because when children are suspended, they also lose time in schools. And I've heard complaints, depending on the campus, that the in-house suspension programs are pretty weak. And so that's something that is not going to benefit children, either in school if the programs are not effective, and out of school if they're, you know, we've got this attendance initiative and we're suspending them. And even though it's not expulsion, they're not in school. So do we have, you know, any information relative to suspensions?
Well, you know, we have databases, but here's what I would say to that. We just had a community committee that spent a lot of time talking about progressive discipline, and the student code of conduct that came before you is the idea is to begin to address those particular kinds of issues. And the restorative justice programs that are being piloted at two of our four middle schools and also we're finding some better, you know, some good progress in terms of suspension. So I think that I really feel like we've made good progress in terms of how we're addressing that, and that with the new student code of conduct and the training and the programs that we're doing, I feel that was part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even our own students on the student advisory committee said, you know, students need to be in school. You know, when they're not in school, they're not learning. You know, we hope that they're going to work on something that keeps those students in school, because it's not them, but they see what happens.
So when do you think we might get some feedback on how the pilots are working? I know at one point there was a volunteer from one of our schools,
mm-hmm,
who was very knowledgeable about what was happening. When do you think would be appropriate for the board to get information?
Well, I would say that, you know, we will have gone through several months. If we could look at it in, you know, late April, May, that would give us some feedback from the year, if that's what the board would like. glad to have them collect some data and present some information.
Thank you. Even if anecdotal.
Okay.
Be great.
But the teachers buy into what you just said as far as the progress with the suspended students, are they buying into that? Because my understanding is it's kind of a revolving door. You suspend them and then they come right back into the classroom. They do the same kinds of things and we send them back out, send them to the principal and they're right back.
I do feel that based on the, in the schools that are doing these programs, yes, there's training going on. I mean, it's a training with the entire staff. So I think bringing some information back to you, you know, to the board in April, late April would be. But it's a training process. It's a process.
Okay.
Ms. Simchek?
I'm going to lead up to this a little bit. We have two new board members, and I'm considering myself the third. And coming to the board, you look around and say, how are we going to do business? And I was not really sure how the discussion worked, and I was surprised that there wasn't public input and just learning the ropes for a new gal. What happened, and I think it's good for us as a group if we're going to grow, we're going to do healthy work, if we're going to agree to disagree, but at least agree to have healthy discussion and allow the community to be a part of it, was anybody could put anything on the agenda. I could say, gee, I want a new school resource officer. I could put it on the agenda. I could put the sheriff out there. I could bring in moms who were afraid their kids were bullied, and I can use the public, you know, perception to try to do something and try to politically, you know, change consensus. Or I could say to, and we had a earlier with a speaker here, very easy. I don't think we have a real, I think as a courtesy we should really all know how we're going to do business. How is our game plan? You have an issue, because what happened was, it's not that charter schools are not an issue to me. It was the wrong place, wrong time, and I think it was good to have a discussion, but I walked through the door, and the gentleman said, I got a presentation, and you just got to listen to it, and you just got to say yes. And meantime, I would have burning questions. What is the statute that pays them, and what's the formula? And meantime, we're going through a superintendent search, and it just was not the time for that issue. And sometimes I'm not sure what the time is for any issue. So if we want to, my discussion here is, I feel that I owe the charter school, I feel I owe, I don't know that we do, but a time and a place for them to make that presentation that they hoped, because they were totally cut off the angles on that particular subject. So that's what I put on as, is there a place that we can, you know, because it's not just a presentation, because then I have to counter with what's my questions, and then I have to counter with, you know, to be fair to them, is there's information from staff I want, but to be fair to staff and the school district funding, is that what's the percentage of the money that they've received? And there's so much depth to that subject that that wasn't a time and place for me then. But I want the constituents to know that it is important that I hear them, and that's just that subject. So I had put the specific, could we have a time date where we can have that discussion in the future? We're busy now, that's fine, but sometime, someplace, I want to have a real discussion where the charter schools feel that they have input. Whether it's a decision that ends up the same way, we may not have the funding, or it ends up we may want to look at their five-year capital plan and give them a... Because I will tell you right now, I will never write a percentage blank check to a charter school. There will be accountability if that is something that is even possible. But they need to have be afforded the input, and we need to have the opportunity to have a time, and not a discussion, because it's not a 15-minute. It'll be lengthy. So the first thing is, I do want to give the charter schools a chance to actually get to a podium, to a workshop, to a place to express what they wanted to say. That probably wasn't the right time at the time. The second thing, and just it's a piggyback of this idea, is if we are going to work together, some of us are together for 4 years, a couple of more years, if we're going to bring progress and healthy and say, okay, you know, I'm sure that I like your idea, Matt, but, you know, sure, bring it up the flagpole, let's see, bring in staff, you know, let's make it a time certain where we'll discuss it. instead of, you know, these pockets of there was an idea but it wasn't the right time or people can't speak. So I don't know what the time is. I'm asking collectively as a group. You know, we all have, you know, different areas that we have concerns. And I'm sure that each one of you at some time would like to say, you know, I've been approached by a constituent or I have a concern on my own. I've noticed in the school there was a safety issue like today. That was quick. But what if it's not quick? Where is the time? That's my question. Where is the time to do these things? And how do we be transparent to the public, allow them the opportunity to speak, and, you know, also allow for our questions and open dialogue? Does anybody can... I'd like feedback.
Well, we can do pretty much anything you want. I know that doesn't help you. For instance, several years ago, we had a... we called it a discussion or a workshop or whatever the crap we called it. But it was, this whole room was taken up where we are. It was a big old, both legal you. I don't know if, I think Eric was here then. I'm talking about with the charter school representatives. There was somebody here from Imagine. Gene was here. I'm almost positive it was back when Harry was here. All the charter schools were represented. All the board members were here. Dr. O'Cobb was here and staff was available. And it was, and it wasn't staff driven. It was, these are our issues, you know, and, you know, board members, and, you know, we're trying to find two nickels to pay janitors right now. Mm-hmm. you know, and everything always comes back to money. But we had one of those, and we can do that again. That's very easy to do. We just have to find, you know, a Tuesday. Well, no, it doesn't even have to be a Tuesday, but we can find a Tuesday with a hole after April 15th. And you know, and do something like that again. You can ask at the beginning of it if you want to let Gene do a presentation. If three board members want to do that, then that's what we're going to do. I know saying we can do anything you want is kind of open ended, but it really is. I mean, you just have to come to the board with an idea. You get two head nods, we're doing it.
Well, and that's why I'm coming because you know, and I know it's subject by subject, but the thing is, you know, I had a gentleman say, "I got a presentation." I said, "I'm very busy with it." Well, all you got to do is listen and say yes. That's not my answer. Well, and of course, it was the particular guy. I get him though. But the my thing would be, well, it's not that. It's not that I don't want to hear you. It's that I want to know from the attorney. Please tell me about the statute. Please tell me exactly what it means because I can read it. Please tell me, Charter, come back and tell me how much money you did get that from that funding. Where's the, you know, so there's a lot of, that's meaty. We may not, so when we have, it's not just a presentation, and I guess each one is going to be separate, but what I wanted to say to board members is I want that to happen for us, not, you know, like, just on anything, but on things that, like, we solved it very quickly. So I really, that's part of my thing is, I did not want to give Charter the time, but I, for me, I will need more time because I will not just listen to a presentation and just smile a plastic smile and go, thank you. You know, I want to have corrective dialogue or at least say, these are my questions and concerns, and it's not, yes, the way you want it, but this is what I feel as one person, and then collectively say, you know, have that consensus and conscious discussion, because I feel we do owe that to our charter schools. That just wasn't the day, although they might have thought it was. And as I said, in general, I also said, like, you know, if we do have something, I don't think that we should, you know, it's really more of a, let's be kind to each other. You know, if someone of us consciously brings up something, this is my thoughts. It comes up in a discussion setting. Say, listen, I've been brought to, this is it. What do you guys, want to do this? I mean, this is what I'm hoping we would do for each other. This is what I've been, do I have any takers? And you know what, the next discussion meeting, if there's time, if it's a small item, let's do it. Can I put it, you know, sounds like good to put it on as a presentation for the next discussion meeting. We're going to have to use, just like we use common sense with the handouts, we're going to have to use common sense with each other as to where we're going to fit it in. Is it short enough to fit it into a discussion meeting like you suggested today? Or is it something where it's going to be a thrash around? We don't have time for it. You know, so can we have a date certain? And that was for this subject, and I hope I can get that kind of consensus for me. I have nothing else in mind.
Or, you know, a more structured, comprehensive discussion with the charter schools present, we can certainly do that.
Yeah.
And you can ask Dr. Adams to have staff present. Certainly, just especially if it's on Tuesday, Ms. DeAgresta will be here. You know, we've done that. We did that before with the NAACP and some other members of that community. We've done it with the county commissioners. Joe Barrett here one day. Those are all awesome. Yeah. You know,
and that's what I'm saying, because based on the amount of attendance we had, and what is a shame, because we didn't have the time. I mean, I was blindsided by that, to be honest with you. And that is a lengthy task, as you went through before. You know, because my thing would be, well, what's your, you know, if we had that plan, then I would be saying, please come with your 5-year capital plan. Because we don't write blank checks to Sebastian High School and say, you spend it on your one. It's in the hopper in a 5-year. You know, so I wouldn't do that to a charter school either, but I would want to have discussion. So, you know, that's my thing. And it's not just this, then, and that's why I brought it up. If one of us has an item that we know it's going to be a meeting, say, hey, you know, listen, this has come up. I know this isn't it, but can we carve out some other time to talk about, you know, DSA, or just talk about, you know, resource officers or something. And I'm not saying that, you know, we got to come up with things to fill time up with for any reason. I'm just saying, if you have that big a need or that big of a consensus from our constituents, then we've got to address it. We should address it. And I just think that that's healthy. And I would like the feedback from the group.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that with the capital plan, when we had that conversation, that's exactly what we did. We had them submit their capital needs, and it was done methodically and fairly, and then a number was arrived and money was given to them. But I do think that you need to have a goal in mind, because it's not enough to just say, let's bring the charter schools here, we're going to have a conversation. You need some kind of agenda, you need some kind of context, because personally, I really would like to hear what they have to say, because I believe they have some misunderstandings about the statutes. And I would like the opportunity, if we're going to meet with the charter schools, we have a pending issue on the random drug testing, and I would love to take that opportunity to clarify that. So those are two issues right there that can be placed on the agenda. What, you know, and then we have the council present to explain the violation of the statute. They would be present to explain their interpretation, and we could have a nice conversation about what needs to be done in terms of oversight. The same thing with capital. Mm-hmm. You know, what their needs are, what statutory, you know, that kind of thing. So I think we would all benefit, but we have to be careful not to make it a free-for-all, because it can become a complaint session, and that's not really, it's going to alienate people. But if we have an agenda and we have staff prepared, they come prepared, then we get all sides.
Yeah. Oh. All I would like to say is I really feel like the discussion session for the board, at least as I understood it, is to bring issues up among yourselves to say, this is rising to a point where I think we need to take it to the next level. And you direct your superintendent to say, we need to have the charter schools in here to do a presentation with us. And so we all have our information together. But, you know, I think this discussion is what you're doing, and it's kind of rising to a point to say, we'd like to take it to another level, rather than having people show up but it needs to be kind of a consensus among you, which that's good. That's what the discussion about. And then go to the next level and direct your superintendent to.
I agree with you, but I think that one of the things that we have been negligent in as ourselves as a board is that in the same way that the superintendent can call workshops to give us information, the board can call workshops.
Sure.
And when a board calls for a workshop, I mean, I had this happen to me, and I think because you're inexperienced, you don't speak up, but when I asked for a workshop, all of a sudden it became the district's workshop. And then I lost my opportunity as a board member to have any, to have input, because it became district-driven, and then who am I, the board member, to get myself involved? And so I think there has to be a balance. When it's district, I'm not telling the district what to do about their emergency management. They're the experts. But if we're calling, say, something around charters, and there are issues that we would like to see, we should be allowed to say, we want to talk about this, staff, come. This person needs to be here and present both sides, and because it's a little bit more board-driven. So I think that there does have to be a balance, because it keeps, you know, everything becomes driven by the district, which is, for at some point that's perfect, but at other points the board needs to have opportunities to bring forth.
And I'm not suggesting it be district driven. Suggesting that you bring those to, you know, so you have that balance.
I think that was good because I think you heard what was going on. You just summarized it. But this would be to answer to your point, Mr. Searcy, when you said, what are we going to do? I think we should have a workshop as a board. Because my questions, I will tell you, interviewing one of the candidates, asked about charter schools, how they felt, and then said, how do you feel about capital and, you know, have you had an experience? And the answer was, what do you say? Aren't they all our children? And yes, they are. I said, well, how do you feel about, they received other funds, though. So how do you do that? He says, it's a percentage, and you make them bring the funds, which is what you said. So now we're all talking, and it's kind of, and I'm formalizing them, like, well, how many other districts? I would like to know, out of 67 districts, how many other districts are actually giving capital money? Maybe 66 aren't, and we would be the first. So those are all questions that we could direct staff to provide that information. So in answer, I agree with you, Mr. Searcy. What are we going to do? So I would like an opportunity to, what are we going to do, but where do we have the time to ask all that? And so I am being fair to the public, but fair to you on your discussion item. I agree, there should be a time. And I'm saying that, I think Ms. Jimenez is right. When, and that's what I was asking with the big lead up to this, was we're a new board. We want to accomplish great things, as all boards do, but we're new, we're gelling. We want to respect each other, and I think this is healthy because this is the first issue, and at some other later point, there's going to be another burning issue in the community and or with an individual member. So we should make a time for that.
I tell you what, let's leave it at this, or not leave it at this. Sorry, talk all you want, I don't care. If you want to take the lead, okay, kind of figure out what you want to do, and bring it back to the next time we're together. Say, look, this is what I want to do. This is how I envision it happening. This is what I want. This is how I want it led. This is the information I want prior to the meeting. Okay, all the logistics, you know, just those logistic type stuff. We want a representative from every charter. We want Mr. Sanders there. We want blah, 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 blah. You know, logistics. You know, drill down till you hit oil. Then come back to the board. Say, this is what I propose, and this is what how I see it going. You get two head nods, we'll make it happen.
I won't go any further unless somebody doesn't want me to do that. I mean, I'm by myself, so that's a lot of, you know.
Like I said, we have not gotten together. We have not had that meeting in quite a long time. Because we can have, again, we've done it with county commissioners, we've done it with NAACP. I'm going to have one with the University of Florida cheerleaders, but different.
Okay, Matt, let's move on.
We didn't answer. This item says discuss future date certain. We're going to have a presentation on behalf of the charter school. Did we decide on that?
You want to get a calendar, look at the date, and I'll tell you what I want covered, what I think that we should the next discussion. We'll make it. We can make it far off that you could. That I could come back to the discussion next month and tell you what I think should be on that workshop.
I think that's the thing. Seriously, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Tell us what you want to have happen. You got two head nods.
Yes, but we don't even know what they want to discuss. And my way of thinking, the superintendent sets the agenda. If the superintendent wants to put a presentation on the agenda from Mr. Waddell and the charter schools, invite them to come give a presentation to the board. We don't have the interaction. Well, sorry, what there is in presentations, if we can have interaction, it's not going to be the place that we would need to have
okay.
that.
That's
but
a good
at
idea.
Least we
Thank
find
you.
Out. At least we find out what their issue is, that school anyway, what their issue is, and then we can begin to figure out what research we need to do and what people we need to bring in for this big meeting you're talking about.
That I mean, you can.
Superintendent sets the meeting, that sets the agenda, and I think it would be up to the superintendent to decide if we're going to have a presentation. We do it all the time with the Heart Association, different kind of presentation. It's a little different than this.
The board set their own workshops. The superintendent, with all due respect, you set your workshop, but board members, the way we've done it in the past, if three board members said, we want a workshop on this, we can have a workshop. And the superintendent usually works with us. It's not a big deal.
I have the answer to that. This will end it.
I will put, because I can put anything I want on an agenda, that, right? Is that correct?
Yeah,
I could put on a presentation for charter school and request that they come, and I'll invite them and put, and
no,
then ask.
I came to you with my presentation. I did not put it on the agenda and said, I want Ms. Woodhouse here, put it on the agenda, she's coming. You talked about teamwork.
Yeah.
We work best as a team when we listen to each other, and so you are talking to
sure.
us now, and it sounds like you do have people that want to hear this, so we're ready to move forward. I think we need to be cautious about getting this mindset that I do this, I come in, you call me, you want this to be done, and I just go put it on the agenda. We need to be very careful. We had that happen with Mr. Heron when he wanted to come and give us his perspective on things, and we have to be very careful to open up, set that precedent, because then every single person at this table is going to have their little pet project and ram it down everybody's throat,
yes.
and that is not how a board works together.
That
we work as a team, not as individuals.
Okay, we're getting hung up.
So then, let me hear, because I thought I heard Mr. Searcy then say, because the superintendent, I guess you're right, she could with our direction. Are we going to direct the superintendent to let them do the presentation, and what information they feed us, then we could figure out what type of workshop we want to have.
Doesn't that make sense? I mean,
makes sense to me.
Okay.
I'm at your direction.
Okay.
So we're going to do capital outlay and random drug testing when we have that, when they present. When the workshop is done that the board wants, they want it on capital outlay. And since we're asking for board input, if we're focusing on Mr. Waddell's school, I would also, as a board member, it is our responsibility to have oversight and take advantage and talk about
it. I think what I heard is that they have a presentation that they wanted to make, okay? And so let them come and make it to us. Not a lot of responses, but clarification. Make sure we understand everything they wanted to ask us. And then we both go to work and come up with, are there some options, or where do we go from there? But not, that's what I thought I heard.
We should direct their presentation.
Right.
Then
right.
do their presentation.
Yes. Right.
And then if we
we're
want to
listen.
Talk about the drugs,
clarification.
That's awesome. Just, I think, and I think, and then this way, it's time. Sensitive to the fact that they were, because I feel they were refused, and so I think I get what he's saying. Let them come make their presentation, and then the next discussion meeting or whatever that after that we can discuss. Hey, that was a very, you know, that was not, they're not right, or they I think they're misinformed, or we're misinformed, or we didn't know, or what could we do, and what kind of workshop can we have that plus the drug testing.
Right. And I'm willing to reach out to them to try and get a date if you want me to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and we're talking about coming to, I want to clarify this too, we're talking about having them come to a discussion session to make that presentation to us. Is that correct? Okay.
Is that correct? Discussion, or I don't know, can you do that in a workshop? Or
you can do it either way. If it's just a if it's just kind of a one
meeting.
Way.
How long?
No,
is
not
a
meeting.
I thought he said 20 minutes.
Okay.
And that was a big problem of that day too.
Right. So at a discussion.
20 minutes without discussion.
So, discussion,
I mean,
or workshop?
If it's a discussion, there's just not enough, you know, time out of discussion. Then
yeah, I'm a little confused, and I want to refresh this, because I thought it was they come to the board meeting and they make a presentation, and there's no discussion.
I don't think that that's appropriate, because when there's misinformation, you are televising misinformation to the entire community, and there's no chance for clarification.
I think a workshop or this.
I think a workshop or discussion, yeah, because... you know, also, the board meetings are there to do the work of the district, to get the work done. And therefore, we do not have, we don't typically have back and forth interaction. You know, the time to have those conversations are here in either a workshop setting, which means it's just a standalone by itself. And if you think it's media enough, we can have a standalone workshop with just that. Or if you think it's not media to have a standalone workshop, you can do it as part of a discussion group like this. That doesn't matter to me.
No, I think that, in fairness to the charter schools or to anybody on any subject, they come, they give a presentation. There is not that meaty workshop time allowed for us to have me to understand the Florida statute and come to whatever. I'm just making the assumption because I was told it was capital. It was based under capital funds, so I'm sure it's going to be about capital funds.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we should just roll our sleeves up, pick a date,
Okay,
and
I,
do the work.
I'm confused now. Because first you said you just want them to come and do a 20-minute presentation, and then at a later date, we mull it over and have that conversation. Now you're saying they come and do the presentation, we roll up our sleeves and tackle it. And if that's the case, then our staff has to be ready to engage.
Exactly.
The attorney has to be there, and everybody has to be ready to engage. So they should give us their PowerPoint 7 days in advance of that workshop so we know the content and we're prepared. So you were talking about two things. First, you said let them talk. Give them 20 minutes to talk, and we don't interrupt. We listen. And then I heard Mr. Frost say, then we come back at another time and we discuss. Is what I heard you say. Maybe I
think I've had a chance to speak yet.
Honestly, I know you were speaking.
But I heard that somewhere. But anyway, so are you talking about something different now?
Okay.
You're talking about a full
workshop. Mr. Mattis,
hang
on a second. Let's try to.
Can I get the explanation, please?
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
We got it.
Okay.
The way I'm hearing this is there's enough conversation that is meaty enough to have a standalone workshop. With conversation back and forth. Is that correct?
Because I want to clarify. I was confused. I thought it was just coming and doing a presentation, and then afterwards of the discussion, we would then talk about a workshop. But if it's a presentation today and part two, some other date, they're going to be frustrated.
And I understand. If we have a workshop, just like any workshop, it's just a board workshop.
Mm-hmm.
But for him, helps us facilitate that. You do a presentation, you can have a discussion. What about this? What do you know about this? Discussion goes back and forth between anybody and all God's children in the room. But there's no decision made. There's nothing made then. Then it's just a discussion. Then you go back, either by yourself in your living room, or here, maybe bring up another discussion, or someone wants to put an agenda item on, blah, blah, blah. Then that's where you go on. I think that's where we're going with this.
Yes.
Am I correct? Mr. Frost? Help me out here.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if we got there yet.
I think this is important work because that we're doing meta communication here. We're communicating about how we communicate, and I think that's good. When we do that, we have to look at CPR. Is it the content, the pattern, or the relationship that we're talking about here? And I think that we're talking about all of them. So, as far as this particular item, that's the general approach. I think in general we could do a better job of putting things on the agenda, the backup materials and things like that where we've already agreed to that makes sense. Just having more transparent and more communication, more interaction, because there are a lot of really smart people who sometimes sit over here and have great things to say that don't get a chance to, so I don't know that we want to open up that can of worms.
No, not today.
Yes, I mean, we have a doctor, a couple of them out there, So, specifically claim to that the ADR, Restorative Justice.
Mm-hmm.
There were two people in the audience who had really great things that could have been said, and they were staff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were employees that could have really helped us understand what's going on, but that didn't happen. So, that's a long way of saying my interest is more people having an opportunity to speak. So, however we do that, and I believe in board call meetings and workshops, and that's probably the best way to address this is a board called workshop. So,
all right, we're good.
Yes.
All right, and if you would get with Dr. Adams to help facilitate that in terms of who should be anybody can, who should be present. Awesome. All right. Work out logistics. Mr. Frost, you got anything else?
Are we on committee reports yet?
Not yet.
Okay. No, sir.
I guess you just agreed upon this will be after the superintendent.
April 15th, after
next week.
I mean, I just want to...
Friday.
don't expect it on Friday.
That could be a good summer.
You have said it's a good summer project.
That is a good summer project.
Okay,
I don't have anything else. Mr. Searcy?
Well, first of all, Sean, I think one of the reasons that we don't allow the public to be engaged in our conversation is just like what's going on up here.
Mm-hmm.
You get a meeting, and I've been in some of those, by the way, that went until 2 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. Fran might have been in some of those, too. and years gone by. But you just can't do it. Everybody's got some input. It's all great, but where do you draw the line? Mm-hmm. But the workshop sounds to me to be a better deal. But anyway, my issue is holding back students in the early grades. We heard one of the teachers the other day, I think at our last board meeting, indicate that sometimes they feel like a student should be held back, and it goes to some committee, and they don't hold the students back. And my question is, are we missing the opportunity to help a child? If the teacher who works with them every single day understands it, they're not getting it. And the committee gets this person and they say, well, you know, we got to move them on because we've got some more coming up behind them. We can't hold them back. Would that be the proper time to maybe get that child tested and maybe see if there's some mental problem or some other problem that's keeping them from getting it? I don't know the numbers on the holding back students, but once they get past the third grade, and this is not moonshot, once they get past the third grade, it seems as though we begin the process of getting them ready to go to the alternative school. And how much money do we spend on that program? And if we could somehow or another identify their needs, do a pull-out program. I know that it works in the charter school at Ken Miller School. They actually pay overtime. The union probably wouldn't let us do this, but they actually pay overtime when they identify children that have a reading issue. They pull them out and give them a couple of hours extra reading instruction. I think two or three times a week, and it's working. Obviously, they rate pretty high. But can we do something to help those students that are missing the boat? Can we?
Absolutely. And things are being, things are being done every day. And it is about starting out the first day in kindergarten. You don't have to be tested to know when a child is developmentally delayed or when students need more support. And so it's done in a lot of different ways. And the what you must do is do it from the first day, okay, in kindergarten. And so the state requires that you have a 90-minute block for, let's use reading as the example, because I would say reading would be that foundational skill where students struggle, the most, and it's so critical. And then what do we do beyond that? And that's where it comes into what you're talking about. So students that are having difficulties in oral fluency, they have small groups that they pull together to work with those particular students. It might be with the same teacher. Very often it's with a different teacher. There's a lot of different ways you can do that. But it's providing interventions and providing additional support for those students. In our Title I schools, where you have the highest number of students at risk, they have, after school, 5 days a week, basically most of the year. And it doesn't start right after the school begins, but usually they get into it probably October. So they have after school to target extra time for students. We have summer programs. We have, we provide a lot of additional time. And that's where, you do need to talk about the moonshot, because now you have a community that's trying to work in the front end so that when your students come to you, they're more ready. And that's a good return on investment. As far as retentions go, I pulled some data, and I hope that every board member will take a look at it. If you're interested, I'll provide it. There's a meta-analysis on retention over the last 30 years, and does it work once in a while for a student? It absolutely does. But in the long term, they say provide interventions, provide extra time, provide evidence-based programs that students are learning, and are you trending, and are you monitoring? But the meta-analysis has been done over the years on retention. Florida has two mandatory times that you must retain a student. Mandatory. In third grade, if you don't meet the reading proficiency, And in eighth grade, if a middle school child has not passed all their core classes, they must be retained in eighth grade. They cannot go on to ninth grade until they've passed. It's very unusual that you have a state that has two mandatory retentions. And the data on students on this meta-analysis that has been retained once, and I mentioned this the other day, is puts a student at risk of dropping out. But if they're retained twice and they're 2 years behind their core cohort, it's very dismal in terms of the chances. And of course, the older the student gets, the worse it is for a student that's retained and getting behind on their cohort. So, Mr. Searcy, you hit it on the nose when you said, what do we do for these students? And that's where the answer is. The answer is we must provide interventions. We must provide extra time if that's what they need. We must make sure that the programs that we're putting in place are working, and if they're not, then, you know, doing something different. But the other thing that we do is over the years we've provided additional dollars. You're talking about providing additional support. We've provided additional dollars for schools to help close the gap. So it provides some time for tutoring after school with teachers. So there are a lot of interventions and a lot of things that are in place with regard to supporting students.
I know that, thank goodness my kids took after their mom, but they were involved in a gifted program. And it was a pull-out program where they would load the kids up on a bus, and, I mean the students. They load the students up on a bus and take them to another school for gifted experience. Why couldn't we take these students that are not making it, they're recognized, and pull them over and make a special class in a positive way, not, well, you're flunking, you're going over here, but in a, make it be exciting, like going to a gifted class somewhere.
You must be very careful about tracking a student in the early ages, because every student, whether you're an ESE student or a gifted student, needs to be taught on grade level and then either enriched or being provided extra support. And putting all like students together for long periods of time has found over time to be detrimental to the students. So do you need time where you pull out and provide that targeted assistance that they need? Yes, you do. But you don't pull them out and keep them together all day long.
So what are we saying here? We're saying if we've got, out of 20 kids, we've got five children, students, that are not making it, and the teacher has to spend more of her time handling those five students, what's happened to the ones on the other end that can read and can flow right on through? And, you know, we can talk about national statistics and all these statistics, and my concern is every student. And if we're losing one student, we're not doing our job, I don't think. And I just want to figure out some way to address every student. And I think we should be able to do that.
Ms. Hamchuk?
Well, first of all, I think that you were really right spot on, I wanted to say, because this is a conversation that I believe has been initiated by that one teacher that came out at the last meeting and said, you know, we have a problem with this and this and this, and you were perfect. You know, we're sitting there as if we're caught in the deer in the headlights, and you say, hey, do we have a problem, Superintendent? You know, and she said, well, no, we don't. But I can only know from what I've seen. I have an old kindergarten experience with, like, a 12-foot-tall kid that's very immature, whereas when they do this, you can't just say, okay, I pinpoint you. The teachers, sadly, has to say, I experienced them out of their seat, one, two, every day. I experienced little Johnny in kindergarten. He can't sit in his seat. And they have to document a million, million times because, as you said, you can't, I don't want to use the word label, but you can't
track
those things. So it becomes only because that's what the law is. And if you're going
to get the testing part.
And the testing as well as even services. And then there's an immaturity level. So, it is problematic because in the simple world, we just let's gather them all up and ship them to that special school. But those restrictions with the counselors, if I remember right, because a lot of times it exhibits itself in won't stay in seat at that age. You know, won't stay in seat, won't stay focused, won't stay whatever, because they don't have that much time in the seat. They can't get that material. And so I'm just saying their hands are tied because they have these big books of
and I don't even know what the name of that is that they have to do, but they have to record and track every time before they can make a referral that that kid should be tested for whatever.
And, you know, it's not so much about testing. It's providing the differentiation that the child needs. You know, whether they have a label or not, they need, you know that they need services. If that gap is there for a disability, then yes, it becomes identified, and there are things you have to do to before you can test a student, like just exactly what you're saying.
But and I'm not saying test grades.
Yeah.
I'm saying test for
a disability
emotional.
Or yeah.
But a comment and a question. But you know, according to IDEA, once a parent makes the request to the school district, the child needs to be tested. So that
starts,
needs,
the referral process starts.
It needs to start. So, you know, it's
there's
not
a,
just...
There's a starting point.
Yeah. But I wanted to follow up on your comment about retention, because that's what I got in trouble for at the last board meeting, trying to process all that, and it was not welcome. So you said that at third grade, I think the law says you can only retain them once, and then the second time they have to move forward.
They cannot retained more than two times.
Is the
that's
same
new
thing
today.
Happening in eighth grade?
No.
More
in
than
eighth
two
grade?
Times.
It's more than two times. More than two retentions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Career. In their career.
And that's
so
new this year.
Two.
That's just new in legislation this past year.
And so the question that I was getting at last time that I couldn't articulate was that when we're talking about retention, a child can get retained, right? They can go say they didn't hold them back in first grade. The committee said no, move them on. They didn't hold them back in second grade. So the child makes it all the way to third grade and gets retained in third grade. And the child is doing third grade work and getting tested at third grade level, but they're not even in first grade reading. And that is a problem for these students because, and that's, to me, it's like I've been trying to understand, how is it possible that a child can graduate from school not being literate or not being numerate? And I was having that aha moment that it maybe that's part of the process that leads that child there. Because they never had the skill set. And when they're in third grade, they don't say, okay, let's get into first grade, test them for those skills. Let's get into second grade, test them for those skills. And continue. They go to third grade, they're going to take whatever third grade test they're required to take. And so that child is not going to do well because they've never, you know, they're not seeing that success. So I don't know how you fix that, but I think that that's part of that problem with the retention, regardless of what the data says. I mean, the data says, yeah, if you retain them, they're going to drop out, blah, blah, blah. But then how do you meet their needs so that they are working within the skill sets that they need? Because that happens.
Well, then, to answer that, part of it would be, then this committee should not have the power to push through more than 2 years. Because if you do it in kindergarten, the teacher is there, Johnny's, for whatever reason, immature, so he's not listening, so he's not learning, but they say, no, you know, he's so big, we got to put him on, or we, you know, give him a chance. And then the second year, the teacher says, no, Johnny's not learning, and the committee has the right to put through a second year. So how do you get to that third year? How does the committee get to that pass? Is there a lot of that? That's the better question. Is there a lot of that going on? How does that landscape of the committee look, and how are they making those decisions?
Well, first of all, it's teachers sitting down with other teachers at that grade level, looking at the grade level requirements and making decisions individually on every child. It is very, very important to look at each child individually. And last year we had 29 kindergartners. I mean, the idea was there was no retention. Well, we do have retention. I can tell you this, the data last year, we had 29 retained in kindergarten, 61 in first grade, 50-some in second grade, and 121 in third grade. So, I mean, to say that there's no retention policy is just absolutely not true, but it must be done carefully. Because regardless of how you personally feel or your personal philosophy is, there is a years and years of study to talk about the pros and cons of retaining a student. So I have great respect for those teachers that sit around the table and know those students the best and know whether it's a developmental delay and they will catch up, whether it's something that this child just really needs extra time. I value their decisions about doing that, and I think they weigh those things very carefully. But there are retentions within the system. I'm hoping, as your superintendent, they are weighing that very carefully. And my expectation is, I don't care who the teacher is, they should be differentiating. They should be providing support for that student in the targeted areas that they need. And you and I and everybody else should be expecting that's done, being done in the classrooms.
Caroline, do you have something?
Just, I'm curious to see if there's any multivariate analysis that takes into effect, takes into account the age at which a student is retained. Because heard you say that the earlier the better, basically, mm-hmm. because more of the. So I guess it's more of the social.
Yes. I would say. I guess the earlier the better, if you put it that way. But once you get into fourth and fifth grade, it becomes a real emotional mm-hmm. and social issue for the child. Mm-hmm. And then think about Florida. You got eighth grade. Okay, so that's when it becomes much more of a more serious social emotional issue for the child as you get beyond third grade.
Mm-hmm. And it seemed as though when you listed off those retention levels, it was a little more and a lot. So
third grade.
By statute, yeah. That's
right.
You come up against it, and it's like, no,
that's
sorry,
it.
you don't get to, you shall not pass.
That's right.
So is there any possibility of placing a little more emphasis on looking at these students earlier on who are struggling and maybe
Absolutely.
Giving them a little closer analysis so that we're not, I'm a big believer in failing forward. That means you've learned from the process.
Right.
And that's just...
Yeah. I think a lot of the work that's being done right now is to look at those earliest... That's what you're saying, right? Is
yes.
to look at those earliest years and make sure that we're providing that support and research-based best practices. That's mm-hmm. what it is. It's best practices. It's somebody doing something that's working that we could learn from. You know what I mean? So... It's those type of things, but absolutely.
But you're telling me that state laws keeps us from tracking students.
No, I didn't say state law keeps you from tracking students. No, I didn't say a law. I said we don't want to track students. Why do you want to track them?
That's a personal decision here.
It's a philosophical decision. It's my philosophical decision. And I think it bears... I think there's research. I think that's a research-based opinion. But I think that tracking students in the early years, once we get to sixth grade, we're pretty tracked. But the homogeneous grouping for even our exceptionalized student education students, making sure they're getting instruction on grade level as part of their education with support.
We need to look at that tracking.
Obviously,
we're going to be making some decisions next week that's going to be or we'll get another look at the process.
I just wanted to speak just from a personal view. I assume I'm the only one here. My oldest got out of kindergarten with papers, and she was held back first grade. She would have known at that time that she was being put in the dumb class. And she was scared to death that she was going to be put in a dumb class. That would have been her last day at that school. And it's a very personal to me.
So what do you do, Matt? You just let it go?
I'm telling you from a father's point of view.
Uh-huh.
And I guarantee you pretty much every parent who gives a crap is going to feel the same way. It is what it is.
I just want to say, because it happened in charter junior high, 6, 7, and 8, they call their classes the flocks. But every kid knows the smarty flock, we're the middle kids, and they're the dumb class. And yet you go to, like, Storm Grove for middle school, and they switch all day. But when they get to the difficult subject, there's 7 reading classes.
Right.
So, and by the way, they track those kids by reading. So if your kid is geometries right now, honors, but he's still taking reading at night, you're tracking by one subject. So that's the pitfall of a charter school doing that. And if they didn't, as you said, sensitive, if you don't put him in the middle because he's up here and down there, he knows he's in the dumb class. And they all,
and it's not just the older kids who understand about me.
It's the kids, all kids know you know, very early. So I think that that tracking, like, and maybe you're asking the answer, I don't know, because these kids can recognize it, they can smell it, they can sense it, but it's just...
they can smell it and feel it and whatever, but if we make that child able to pass third grade without being held back, I'm not opposed to that. And if they become competent readers and competent students after they go through get out of the third grade, I don't want to say I don't care what they think. I do care what they think or what they feel. I want them to be able to read and learn and not be a burden on society. Because if they get to the eighth grade and they don't pass or we hold them back or whatever, then they go into the juvenile justice system. I mean, soon after that.
It's prevalent, I am sorry to say, but I don't know that everybody has high expectations for all students. And then once you start tracking students, that's out the window, because you do not have the same expectations for this group of students as you have for that group of students. And that's a fact. And so but that's why we just have to be very, very careful and have those expectations and provide the supports that we need to get every child successful. But it is about expectations for every child.
Ms. Minish, you got the next? Anything else?
Yes. One of my issues is not ready. When we had a conversation before about living wage, we were supposed to have some information, but it's not ready. So I'm hoping that maybe for the next discussion session. Yeah. But one thing that I wanted to bring up, I got an email from someone stating, and this is just an information question, if we could get a response to that, that this person worked in the school district in 2000, I don't know, like 5 or 6 years ago, and then what we were paying the subs was $100. And all these years later, we're still paying the same thing. And I just wanted to throw that into the equation, because one of our biggest challenges when we have subs is getting quality subs. And with all of these programs and these pullouts that teachers do, they're not in the classroom. A substitute is in the classroom, and we want quality subs. So I just wanted to know if that was true. And I'll get the email with the exact information, because I can't find it right now.
And if the board would like, we'll bring some information back on subs, because we've been actually doing some work on trying to get some data.
Do you got anything else?
No.
Sean, you got anything?
No, sir.
I do not. Mr. Sears, you got anything else?
No.
All right. Committee reports. Ms. Cross, you've been chomping with it.
I think she has one more.
I'm sorry, that's okay. I had a final one. This is going back to the extracurricular policy. And I did talk to Dr. Adams about it, and she clarified that Section 7 of the Code of Conduct actually does state the procedure that is followed. So what I would like us to do is to strike that final sentence, students prohibited from participating in all or part of any extracurricular activity are not entitled to further notice, hearing, or appeal rights, because it's really not needed. The third to last paragraph explains the procedure, and the procedure tells you what the final decision is. So that sentence really confounds the issue. And if a parent is not aware of that process and doesn't read it carefully, they're going to assume that they have no recourse. So maybe when this comes before the board, we can strike this. If the board members could take a look at it and see if, I'm going to recommend that when we have the hearing on the 24th. I would hope that, we can maybe take care of it before then. But that would be my recommendation, because there is language that tells you what the procedure is, and I think that sentence just confounds the situation and can be misinterpreted to indicate that there's no appeal when, in fact, people were part of the process. So
I think what the policy is trying to say is you have gone through your due process, and so therefore, you've gone through your appeals. And what I showed Mrs. Jimenez is trying to clarify that in the Student Code of Conduct, it says that. Okay, so in the policy, it's basically restating, if you will, that there are no appeals, that you have gone through your due process. So it's...
I will bring that up.
All right, Ms. Ross.
Committee reports. Economic development, the economic development zones are pretty much dead as far as we know them, and that's also pretty much what everyone in Tallahassee is saying. We had at the, and this flows into the next one because Helene spoke at the Treasure Coast League of Local Governments, or Council of Local Governments, and she spoke on economic development zones. And they had a lobbyist on the phone who said, yeah, that's everyone that they've talked to says that they're gone. So we will lose one here, and it's around the airport in the Gifford area. And the idea was that there were incentives for businesses to operate there, such as Girard. They make valves, and I guess they've employed 50 people from the Gifford area. As a result of some of the tax incentives and labor force grants. So that's something we'll have to keep our eyes on. There are a number of proposals before the legislature, but the one in the lead right now basically creates an unfunded mandate for local governments so they'll get used to our world. Basically saying we'll, at the local expense, have to set up our own economic development zones without sales tax abatement and things along those lines. So that's something, as we think about our students, especially those who are graduating, that's going away. In good news, I guess the How It's Made folks were here filming at Piper.
And Girard.
Yeah. So congratulations.
Yeah. I think June. Program. I think June is when that's going to be televised.
I think they said as far, I think it was like actually
Discovery.
December.
Oh,
I think they have a really long production process, but I'll tell you all to be sure to tune in to Piper. That's economic, and that's Treasure, of course, the train. And planning and zoning county-wise, there's a new development that was approved. I think it's 134 units at the front of Bent Pine. So that on the Kings Highway, 58th Avenue, that's it's on the east, northeast. It's on the northeast portion there, where it's all there. Of course, there's a requirement for level B buffers, and it'll be pretty, and there'll be sidewalks for storm growth. So that's the only important piece, as far as we're concerned. And I guess it's funded, so development is happening again. You know, on the positive side. That's it for me. Thank you.
I would like to say that who's the gentleman over at the county that does the growth piece? He came over and spoke at SLC.
Stan Bowling or
no.
Chris Moore?
Chris
Moore. Young guy, Bill.
Yeah. Anyhow, he came over and he showed us different areas where there's growth there. Now, in that particular area, we don't expect a lot of young families, but we are keeping an eye on that. But he did. That was one of those areas that he showed.
Yeah, from basically from 49th Street all the way to 61st Street is going to be houses. They've just approved two developments in there, but they are in the upper 200 to 300 to 400 range, and they're expecting them to be more retirement zero lot line. So.
I found the email. I was paid $100 by the district in 2001 before being hired as a teacher. So since 2001 to 2014, it seems like we're paying the same. And I'd love to know if that's true or not. And then often long-term sub positions require a certified teacher, yet the pay is no more than a non-certified teacher. So if you make any distinction there. Thank you.
Two things. Went to the United Way celebration last night. They exceeded their goal, raised over $2 million or something like that. Quite a bit of difference from 1984 when I was the chair, campaign chair, and we raised $450,000. It was impressive last night. But they also named the chair folks for next year. They call them the Magnificent Seven. Wow. Beautiful ladies that are running. So it should be just a marvelous show this next year. But the other thing, I went to the Property Appraisal Adjustment Board, did not get shot. I think we decreased the value of several properties by the amount of around 2
a little over $2 million and decrease the tax base by like $130,000 or $140,000 for the next year. So it was an interesting, that was an interesting thing. I was afraid we were going to get shot, but they had all the dirty work taken care of before we got there. But that's my 2 cents worth.
And I got I picked up our plaque at the United Way meeting.
Oh, yeah?
I picked it up on the way out, so I'll present it to the board.
But the district was highly recognized and for their participation, and I think it's a marvelous, marvelous thing that we do here. It really is. They recognize you a lot.
Okay, I have a couple things that are coming tonight, and one you may have heard about, the calendar.
The one. I was wondering how you got another email on a different topic.
So,
the calendar is this is.
Yeah. Calendar is always a hot topic, but I take all the credit and blame for putting this out here, and I think it's a very important discussion that the board has. First of all, the calendar that is very similar to the calendar that's out there right now. At the beginning of the week, well, first of all, Debbie Mayfield had a bill out there that would have started August 17th. And I think her goal was to try and complete the first semester before winter break, but it didn't give you enough time. So this week, just last week, a bill has come forward. We don't know whether it'll pass or not, but it would allow you to start no earlier than August 10th. And I'm bringing that forward, understanding that it's a pretty kind of a bold gesture right now. And the reason I'm bringing it forward is we must look at the calendar and make some academic decisions about what's best for kids. And this is late, and it will not be decided until May, but I think the discussion needs to start today about how we're going to look at the calendar from now on. This would allow the students to start August 10th. The students would be completed first semester by winter break. You pick up almost 2 full weeks of instruction coming back from Christmas break. You know, the tests started March 2nd. This year, the writing test started March 2nd. When the students came back from winter break, they went all the way till January 21st with review and final exams. So they didn't even start second semester. So you spend all that time reviewing and having 3 half-days of final exams in January. Tests start March 2nd. If you can complete these before winter break, you come back and you start into instruction for semester 2. So this would allow students to start on the 10th. It means they would be finished on Memorial Day. They would be finished before Memorial Day. This is a change to band camp. It's a change to many things that we do right now. So it's kind of a jolt to the system. But I feel like you need to have a discussion about it, because I think May 1st is very late, okay? But no matter when you bring this forward, it will be a jolt. So maybe it's good to have the conversation now about putting an academic calendar forward. I feel like we have a very adult-friendly calendar that we have provided over time, and I think if we can bring something forward with all the assessments that we know students have that will better serve them, then I think that's what we should do. And I believe this calendar does that.
B or A?
B.
So B is the one that would go into place if it passes.
And B would, yeah. The issue is you don't know until May 1st, okay? So,
Sean?
Claudia probably can speak to this, our legislative person, but the work plan this year with the legislature is such that the committees are controlling pretty much the entire conversation. They're what are called PCBs, proposed
right.
committee bills.
Mm-hmm.
On the Senate side, you have 616, which sort of addresses this, and on the House side, you have another one that's What's that?
I don't understand. I hate this group of people.
Well,
we talking Chinese. I was.
Yeah. Are they both talking
about?
Yes.
All right. There's a Senate bill. There's a House bill. And you watch them, and then the one will do this, and then magically the next week, or a couple days later, there's a mirror that happens on this side.
Written the way they like it.
Exactly. They're written the way they like it, and they're, you know, they're dialing it in, and they had the four corners, and now it's starting to be fleshed out. But the high probability is that it's going to be the August 10th proposal, no earlier than August 10th. And so having a contingency in place is not unreasonable. So.
All right. Thanks for that clarification, but I'm not the legislative person.
I thought she was.
No, I'm sorry. No, okay. I just the piece that your legislative liaison is Mr. Searcy. But there are a couple of issues here. We've got the issue of the calendar committee and the fact that the board never saw the calendar that came forth from the calendar committee. So I think it's going to be important at tonight's meeting that there be an explanation of what the differences are in those A calendars and B calendars so that the committee, which is an advisory committee, understands that their recommendations were looked at, but the district has to focus on the academic needs of students and they have the right to make changes. So that's one issue. The other issue is the timeliness. I have like six calendars, and I think just recently there was yet another change to the calendar. It's very difficult for people to think that the district is being transparent when we keep making changes at the last minute, and then it comes before the board, and we're going to vote for it. And in terms of having a backup calendar, I think that it's a great idea to put out there the possibility of what's going to happen if the bill passes, but I think the board would be foolish to adopt two calendars, which is going to still leave people at the adults, because I do agree with Dr. Adams, this is an adult calendar, it's not a children's calendar. It's about adults' vacations and adults' personal needs. Not one email that I received out of like 40 emails had anything to say about the needs of the children. Okay. It was all about the adults. Maybe you got to tell
yeah, yeah,
what
yeah,
the needs of the kids are. And so that's an issue because, and this year we can't fix that, but we can create the expectation that if the bill passes, there will be changes and the focus is going to be academic. So I think that it was a bold thing to do to put that out there because there was going to be a lot of pushback, but I would hope that the board really looks at this and decides if it's in the best interest of our families to adopt two calendars and leave people up in the air yet again. So we should be cautious of that.
And just because I had to be made clear, just because it passes that you can start the 10th doesn't mean that you have to this year.
That's right.
So, I think that's where the clarification I needed. So, right,
that's right.
There's that possibility, too, that it's at least it's discussed, and they may not know about it this year, but they will a year from now know about it. So that's because there are people, and I know what you're saying. And one was the one I just want to tell the one I got was PTA, probably it was PTSA or something, for Sebastian that IB students test late. If you move the calendar up, they'll be testing like the week of graduation for IB. So that was a concern. Putting a lot of pressure. So I think a lot of notice, you're right, and being out there.
Are we going to air this thing out again tonight the same way we've just done it here, or how's that going
to Well, happen? If it's okay, I was going to explain why I put it out there. I mean, I feel, as your superintendent, that you've got to look at a more academic calendar for students in light of all of the expectations on students today. I'm putting it out there with the understanding that it's the committee, calendar committee never saw it. This just came out last week. The calendar committee never saw this. So no matter when it goes out, it's going to be upsetting. So I really like to forewarn. I mean, I really want to hopefully you agree we need to look at it, at least consider moving forward that we've got to take a look at our calendars. I don't think I'm not saying that I think this is going to happen this year, but I'm thinking you should be considering.
You're not doing this because, like, you're leaving June 30, you just want to do this hornet's nest. I just don't want to ask that question because I'm telling you. 40 emails. I was up all night last night trying to answer them.
So you either do it now or you do it next year. So the discussion is better to take place right now so that, you know what, we think that we've got to look at the calendar in future years and make good decisions about what's best for kids. So, you know, you kind of give a heads up about what's coming.
But you're recommending B now? Today you're going to recommend B or you're going to recommend both? I don't remember what the...
My recommendation was that you take both because one is the contingent on legislation passing. And I'm not offended by whatever you do, but I just want you to understand why I brought it forward.
From Tahiti.
Okay.
I just had a comment, and this was after talking to a few parents. You know, in the same way when you go to the school district website, there's a little blue button that tells people about the book. What is that?
Adoption.
The book adoption.
Yeah.
You should have had buttons on that website with the calendar options because people complain that they had a hard time locating the calendar, and because some of this was so last minute, it would have just, we would have gotten a lot of positive feedback if people would have seen that calendar, even though they didn't like it, but it would have been easy for them to find. People just said, like you did for the book adoption.
The August 10th was written last week. It didn't come out until Friday on the legislative report. You know, I mean, we heard earlier from Mixon and Associates, but, you know, this is a shocker. I get it. I'm just hoping that you'll consider it for the future.
Absolutely.
I mean, it'll be a shocker no matter when it's done. But it's kind of advance notice that the legislature could pass it.
It doesn't matter what the legislation says. We don't have to start school that early. Your comments are well taken, but year one, and we got 40 or 80 parents that are breathing down our neck, and
like I said, I'm not offended.
No.
I just want you to.
But, you know, I think that even though we have parents complaining, we have to keep in mind that we need to have a calendar that's going to be what's best for kids. Mm-hmm. And the waste of time, when I was a teacher, when I taught, we had to do the exams before school was over. And it was great for the kids because they had their content, they took their tests, and they were on vacation. It was not good for me because I had to get my work done. But in the end, the priority isn't what I'm comfortable with. It's what is best for our students. So I think it's good to put it out there. The timeliness is crazy. And I think for that reason alone, we wouldn't want to adopt two calendars because it would really be unfair to our community. But that's just in terms of timeliness. But in the future, it's good to give everybody the heads up so they know what we're thinking. And the board may decide not to do that. But I do think that is good for the kids. And we don't waste all those days reviewing, which is wasted academic time that it doesn't benefit anyone.
Yeah. The thing that's so shocking to me is that the testing begins March 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
It's done. You know, we're already through our first week and a half of testing. And yet when we came back from break, we had a whole week and almost 2 weeks of nothing but review and tests for something that happened first semester. Mm-hmm. So... a lot has changed in the last 5 years in terms of what we need to...
But we can't allow this, the new calendar or whatever, to come in March or April or May. There has to be... We have to give folks a year. I mean, there was no legislation pending when we started this process.
Yes,
we have
that's
to
right.
give the people a year so they can make
yes,
their plans. And I mean, we're people-friendly and student-friendly,
right.
But this is not good business the way this is coming down, in my opinion.
Dale?
Just understand why I'm doing it, and I understand what you have to do.
I get it.
No, but I mean setting the calendar. I mean, it's March, and we're just now getting the calendar out. That's not
Dale?
Good to me. I'll do it. It's a different... She sparked a question about the testing. I wonder if there was any glitches reported.
Yeah, there were some glitches reported. we were fortunate that we didn't have maybe some of the other districts had, but we did have some glitches.
Well,
which are documented.
I've heard some people say we were fortunate, but we're not fortunate because the larger districts, when they logged in, they saw the prompt, and then they got kicked out, and then they had 2 to 3 days, and we're assured that they didn't get the same prompt. Thank God it's audio.
We actually had that happen too.
Okay. Okay. But the concern is that smaller districts like ours, who have great IT departments, who were able to do everything right, may not fare as well in a statewide comparison as those where they were able to see the prompt and perhaps have a couple of days to do pre-writing.
I don't know how they will resolve these issues.
No.
I have a calendar question. When you lay out the days on the calendar, I have two concerns. I have a concern that we sometimes have a day off, and then we have an early release Wednesday that same week. And I think that I kind of color-coded them to see what that was like. And I think that's disruptive to the kids. You know, there's no school on Monday. You go back, and then you're off half day again, or modified day on Wednesday. Maybe that should be, you know, when you look at the calendar, don't do them the same week. I mean, the board can give direction to the calendar committee. And then in January's crazy. They come back from break. They have the Martin Luther King Day off. They have another, you know, depending on which calendar you look at, there's so many days off back to back. Isn't there a better way to distribute those days off so kids can actually engage in learning and not be vacation, back a few days, vacation, half day, another day? That's just got to be disruptive, and I don't know if there's a better way, but I just observe that when I put everything on actual calendars, because this isn't really helpful. I don't see where you have all those back-to-back days. So is there anyone that can talk to that phenomena with our calendar?
But while Mr. Fritz is coming up, that's why he and Dr. Suit have been here the whole time, because then we're going to talk about the calendar. But I do want to point out a couple of things on this. There on the calendar A, that there is no Veterans Day. Is that correct?
Neither one. Veterans Day is there. There's school.
Excuse me?
Veterans Day still exists, but there's school.
Yeah, there's school.
Wednesday.
It's on a Wednesday. That is why.
But did the committee recommend that? I'd like to have clarification. What did the committee recommend versus what we are recommending tonight? What are the main differences?
I think the committee, I will answer that. I think the committee initially recommended having Veterans Day off. They came back to the student, to the Superintendent's Leadership Council, and I have notes from previous boards that said no singletons, so that happens in the middle of the week. And what we had said to the veterans is, we promise you we'll do a good job of highlighting the veterans in school. And if it happens on a Friday or a Monday, you know, and last year we made it work on a Tuesday because we had Monday off because of teacher conferences. So the original committee came in with it, and we asked them to reconsider because it was in the middle of the week.
Is that the only difference from the committee?
On the initial recommendation of the calendar committee, and Dr. Sue led the calendar committee, and believe me, that's a complicated task. But there also was a recommendation of both Jewish holidays being off in September. And when the SLC group reviewed that recommendation, it was sent back really because September is a launch month for student learning, and to have 2 days off right there at the beginning is difficult. One of those was a day out of school. The other one was an emergency makeup day. But well, many of you have lived here much longer than I have. The hurricanes don't always come before September 14th. And so to have a hurricane makeup day in September didn't make a lot of sense. And
well,
so
we have a non-paid day.
There's one under calendar A.
Right.
But it was sent back to the committee to review that issue as well. And so the emergency day was moved to November by the committee at that point in time based on that recommendation. However, calendar A has been vetted fully by the committee after the back and forth process with SLC. A version of calendar B was recommended by the calendar committee. It was one that started on August 17th. Because at that point in time, that's what the legislation was looking like. Mm-hmm. I don't remember, Mr. Frost, whether it was on the House side or the Senate side, but it was one or the other, and now the other side has come out. Now it's the 10th. Yeah. And so the 10th actually allows for the fall exams, the fall semester exams, to be completed by the break, which is a good thing, as Dr. Adams said, for instruction prior to exams and to get the second semester launched and all of that. So the committee that's before you tonight, the main difference between, well, there's a couple differences, but the main one is it starts on the 10th and not the 17th, and so it's shifted backwards, which allowed for some of those other things to happen. Now, in order to get the final exams before the break, you had to give up some things. For example, the Thanksgiving holiday is 3 days instead of 5 days.
That's in B.
In B, yes. The Veterans Day piece is gone. The Jewish holiday is gone. I mean, some of those things were taken out in order to get in the number of days you needed. And okay, so that piece was not there because you couldn't make it by winter break under the 17th calendar. And so some of those things were still in there. Those were removed in order to give an option that allowed us to start school on the 10th and finish by Memorial Day.
And A has, but a calendar A has, the committee has seen,
yes,
calendar A,
yes,
as it's presented.
And
it
we
doesn't mean that it originally came that way, but it has gone back and forth to the committee. So that's the way it works. As the calendar committee meets, they're advisory, they send it, and we say, well, you know, we would like you to do this. So they take it back, and they make modifications, and they send it back. And so that's how we got to A.
So this chart shows the main features in each calendar. We thought it would be nice to lay it out for you in this way, just so you can see it at a glance, you know, as you do deliberations regarding it. And I guess I'll say, and we'll give the microphone to Dr. Suit, but on the issue of, well, there's a modified day in the same week as a holiday and all of that. If you put them separately, you have 2 weeks interrupted. If you put them together, you only have one week interrupted. And so the committee does their best to try to create a balance there between continuity of days of student learning, full days of student learning, and meeting all the parameters that they're under with regards to, obviously, when the holidays happen, which we don't have much control over, and then also being in full compliance with the collective bargaining agreement, which has certain days laid out in it. And so it's and you're never going to satisfy everybody. I mean, that's the way it goes with calendars, but I don't know if you have comments about the committee process.
Do both A and B comply with the union contract?
Yeah,
yes.
They do.
How early does the committee start developing the calendar, and does it need to start earlier in order to avoid this?
We started in October.
And do you think that's adequate enough time?
Yes.
Why did it take so long to get here to this stage?
Well, we meet as a committee, we come up with a calendar, then we meet with the superintendent's leadership committee team, and they give us suggestions. Then we go back, we revise. So it takes us a little while to go back and revise the calendar as well.
Ms. Simchak, now you have a question.
Well, I was going to say, and also, and the monkey wrench was the new bill. So if I don't think that we'll have this trouble next year,
right?
Unless they make another bill.
They may do that.
It'll be a beautiful thing to do 2 years out on the calendar, you know, and say this is what it's going to be for the next 2 years. You can.
And it does or does not work.
There's always been something every single year.
Yeah.
Whether it's legislation, whether it's
a union contract.
But yeah, there's been something every single year, but that's what we've always wanted, is have a 2 year like rolling contract, and every year just keep, you know, being able to do it to push us. So people always have 2 years. That's always been the goal. And there's always been a reason it never has happened.
I'm hearing that other districts have 2 year calendars.
I've worked in organizations that had 2 year calendars, but you have to have well, first of all, this was where you didn't have the Florida legislature, which likes to do things that are fairly unilateral. And also you have to You have to have structures that are very stable at your bargaining table, which I think we're getting to that point, but if you remember, last year was the introduction of the modified instructional calendar. That threw some new things into the mix. Actually, I've seen collective bargaining agreements that actually, in the agreement, they talk about how the calendar will be laid out in the agreement, and you don't even have to have a calendar committee. So, for example, they talk about the issue. There are issues that are common themes in calendars. So, for example, if Labor Day is Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, we'll start over here. If it's Monday or Tuesday, we'll start over there. And you agree to those parameters around it. If Veterans Day is on a Monday or Friday, we have it off. If it's on a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, we have school that day. I mean, if you can establish in advance, and that means that through the collective bargaining process, the board agrees to it and the union agrees to it, you can actually have the calendar developed fairly easily in advance, but you have that there's a sacrifice there in that you lose some flexibility.
And then you have to negotiate if you want to change anything. You know,
right.
So.
Right. The calendar committee does give flexibility.
If we are proactive, we can get it done, and we don't have to face this thing. Well, I guess every year, though, you would have to be talking about the following year.
I think you could have a two-year calendar in lieu of changes. In other words, you know that it's possible that there could be changes, but you could have a two-year calendar, and then if something comes up that you have to readdress it, you can do it that way.
But then in that second year, you have to get ready for the third year.
That's
right.
Correct.
So every year you'd be looking 2 years out.
It could be a two-year or 1 year, but
right.
I just think we need to be proactive on that. If other districts can do it, you know, we always compare ourselves to other districts. If other districts can do it, we ought to be able to. And I know you can take good care of that.
I'll delegate it to Dr. Sue. And I trust her.
Stacey, I think you're right. If you did a two-year contract, as long as it was subject to change with a 365-day notice, because or six a 90-day. How many? If our calendar is starting, let's say August 24th, I'll just equate February, March, April, May. You know, with a 150-day notice, no changes, because you would only change for the year. So you could put a contract out for 2 years with the language of annual contract cannot be modified less than... Calendar cannot be modified less than 120 days out or something, and then you have your second in print for plans, but you have the option, as you were saying, to subject to change. But at least there's something out there, and the committees can work. I think it's good.
Let's get 2 years. I mean, these are capable people right here. They can get it done.
Although we would recommend calendar
days.
2 years? Okay. So the whole goal of talking about it right now is just for you to have an understanding of why I put that on the table. I would ask you to think about that in the future, you know, as you work on 1 or 2 year calendars.
If I could mention, part of the process that takes a while is the iterative process with IRCEA, because they have membership on that committee. Mm-hmm. And they go back and they check with their membership, and they come back and they check with us, and it's a back and forth process there. Now, I will say, we heard from a band director, they didn't hear anything. So that's a conversation we'll have with IRCEA.
They wouldn't have anyhow on calendar B.
Yeah, they wouldn't have heard on calendar B. So, that's something where, that process is supposed to work better than it did. And if we're 2 years out, that we can be ahead of that long.
October, it just seems like too long. Light fire under something. Well, we can't say that.
All right.
You guys can do it.
And I have one more thing that I wanted to share with you, because I put an emergency item on the agenda, so I want you to know what that's about. 2 years ago.
This is not our item.
Even a one-eyed home can find. That's right.
Is we rewrote every single board policy through NEOLA, every single board policy. And so as we're working our way through the new textbook adoption process and we're reviewing school board rule, we find that our board rule requires us to go out to bid on all textbooks. Well, that's impossible for us to do. It was never intended for that. The school board depository, okay, we have a depository that we get a rate. Those all have gone through a RFP process. And so we get a much better deal purchasing our books through them, and we don't want our board policy to prohibit us from doing that. So I have taken an emergency to waive that so we can continue through our process of adopting math, of adopting. We have four other textbook subject areas that are up for adoption this coming year. So what I'm asking you to do is to continue that waiver until next board meeting. What I'm going to do, because you have a public hearing on the new, Suzanne, stop me if I make a mistake here.
Yes.
You have a public hearing. I will bring a revision to this policy to that meeting, which means you'll have to pull that policy out and set another public hearing for this new policy. But it would just be it would be impossible. It's just very disruptive to our textbook adoption process. 2 years ago, this came before the superintendents about big districts said, we want to be able to bid our own books. We feel like we can negotiate and get a better price. Middle to smaller districts said, we don't have the capacity to look at every vendor out there and decide if they're aligned to the standards and negotiate. So they provided two avenues for districts to go. You could go you can go to the textbook depository, or you can do the totally vendor, or you can do both. We want to be able to do both, because there are some times where we want to buy textbooks outside of that, more in your elective areas, and so we want to have that ability to do that, but we don't want it to prohibit us from being able to purchase our textbooks through the...
Yeah. Well, if I got this right, the textbook depository has already been vetted through a RFP. Doing is piggybacking another contract, and that should be your choice. So it's just a matter, what you're saying is that you will come back with a clear descriptive of that
In our policy.
In our policy,
yes. Okay. So that's it.
Good meeting,
is that it?
What time is that?
Four.
Okay.
I'm good.
Who's got the Snickers?
I'm taking out. All right, meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
So tonight is the board meeting, and this is all my idea and why I put it up.
No, I appreciate. I understand now what you said.